Rick will be joining us shortly. He was here. He had to step off. But I'd like to call the council, Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council meeting to order. Good morning, members. It's a very important meeting of the council today. We have just a couple of items, but they're very important items. Probably the most significant one is we need to make a recommendation on our allocation for projects for fiscal 2011, which will be incorporated in the appropriations bill that we're going to be reviewing in early January. So that is the primary activity before us today, and Bill's going to talk a little bit about what's before you to give you the summary of the individual allocations. There is one change to the agenda item that we need to make, and that is decision item number 6. Matt Holland from Pheasants Forever contacted Bill earlier this week, and he has a family emergency, so he is not able to make it today. So I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt the agenda with the deletion of item number 6.
So moved.
Bill, is there anything else?
No.
Okay. So the motion before you is to adopt the agenda as presented, absent item number 6. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion adopted. Executive Director report, Bill.
I want to point out that in your packet is the analysis of the member allocations plus the allocation themselves. We've led the meeting off with these in your packet so that you have some time to look them over before we start working on it. You also last time received a future meetings list. I don't think there's one in your packet, but I just wanted to go over the future meetings. There's an executive committee meeting 1-4. That'll be to do the initial review of the bill language on January the 4th. The full council meets the 7th of January, and that should be the meeting at which we approve the recommendations in bill form. We're asking you to save January 13th, 2010, just in case if it's necessary to hammer out our final recommendations. Last night, we listened to a presentation in the Cultural Heritage Committee of the House regarding the recent sales tax forecast. And in terms of actual collections, there was some concerning information that the November sales were off $20 million. The reason that's concerning is that this is Christmas time and Christmas sales, so you may want to just think about that. Also in your packet is the legislative guide that is required by Chapter 172. This is a draft prepared by the House. You're presented with it in order to have an opportunity to review and comment individually. The comments need to go to House staff, and that would be Nancy Connolly, by December 31st. Obviously, the council will not have an opportunity between now and the 31st to meet and take a council position on this. So. The situation is that individuals will have to comment. I wanted to let you know that I'll be in Bemidji on the 28th to present to the Multnomah County Natural Resources Joint Powers Board. Generally, it's the Lasard Council and Outdoor Heritage Fund 101 is what they've asked to have, so they get the 101 PowerPoint, I guess, for people. Also, I'd like to pass out right now copies of the draft accomplishment plan, just as a review of the process after we get actual numbers for recommended projects. We ask the project manager to complete an accomplishment plan explaining how they will use the money that has been allocated to them. We asked the individual who worked on the data to come in last year to come in and give us advice as to how to improve this. Heather's made some changes in the plan, and this will be completed in time for the presentation to the executive committee on the 4th and the full council on the 7th, so that you understand the ramifications of your recommendations. The major change in this from the way it was done last time is the addition of an allocation in a geographic manner using our sections. Any comments that you have, please get them to Heather in the next day or two.
Can I just provide one? I think I've talked to a couple members about this. On the leverage, as I look through the proposal, one thing that I'd like a little bit more detail on, Heather, and maybe we can just make a small modification on page 4 under the leverage part. We say source of leverage, which is useful, but I'd like more information about what that leverage entails. I mean, there were numbers floating around in some of the proposals that I simply couldn't judge whether, you know, $75,000 in leverage from an organization for what. And so I'd like a little bit more description of what that leverage entails. Is that personnel? Is that a cash match? Is that something else? Scott?
One of the questions that I have on that, in that same vein, we had some proposals that listed leverage that they thought they were going to get. Mm-hmm. Not leverage that they actually had gotten. On that leverage form, we need to know whether that is leverage in hand or leverage anticipated.
So you want a degree of uncertainty?
Or keep your fingers crossed.
Or degree of uncertainty. Yeah, there you go. But, I mean, we saw some leverage that was big, like $2.5 million worth of leverage that wasn't there. And so, to me, that needs as much more scrutiny, much like you're recommending.
So, comments to Heather in the next
day or two.
Next day or two.
Before the next few minutes, and it's fine too. Also in your packet, let me back up. We've been going around and around with the Department of Natural Resources about what information they can and can't provide with regard to the Conservation Partners Program. And finally, yesterday I sent down Minnesota Statutes 2009-13.05, Subdivision 7, I believe is what it was, which discusses summary data. And they took note that summary data wasn't protected. And so Leslie provided the blue sheet that's in your packet that shows in a summary fashion a description of what they received. They're still reluctant to provide summary data that reflects their evaluations and are protecting that under 13.599, where it talks about evaluation data. If members are interested, they can send me an email and I'll send them these statutes. And that, Mr. Chair, is the Executive Director's report. I'll stand for questions.
Wayne.
Bill, Mr. Chair, we've got a concern about the money that we give to the small grants program. It's here we are in our second cycle, and we don't even know whether the money was spent appropriately. You know, I mean, we're taking a shot at it. We're anticipating that all the money was spent on projects that everybody here would agree upon. Now, unlike all the rest of the projects we look at, where we actually get a chance to see, feel, taste, and everything, and rank them, that's the only one we don't. And now we're anticipating on our second cycle here that the first one was taken care of properly. I don't know how we can get around doing that unless we're always going to be 1 year out and knowing what happened. It's a strange situation compared to all the rest of the ones we work with.
Well, and I think everyone shares that frustration when we came to, you know, allocating projects. It would have been nice to know how many, you know, veritable projects there were and how much money that entailed. So if there is a demand for $10 million of really good habitat projects, that would have been nice to know. If there's a demand for $2 million, that would have equally been nice to know, but we just don't have that information. Scott?
Can we change the RFP and decision date of the Conservation Partners Program so that they have to complete that by 2 months prior to this date next year? So they put out their RFP, they had to have them in by November. Let's say they do that in June, they got to be in by August, they make their decisions by November, so that we have that information 2 months before this day next year.
We have the capacity in our appropriations bill to stipulate things like that. The problem is in predicting where everybody will be in the cycle in the upcoming round. And the other problem is what I would really like to see them do is continue to solicit projects, as most DNR grant programs do, under the assumption that they will receive more money and then they can get it out the door on July the 1st, so it gets to working as fast as possible. Which I think would make this issue moot with regard to our cycle. I think the other thing that we could do if we wanted to was ask them in our appropriations law to have applicants waive the top secret provisions of their applications. That would have to be passed by the legislature and might take our bill in a different direction than it might otherwise go. But it's in the realm of possibility. I will take under advisement your concept of stipulating their cycle and see what we can do.
I mean, even if they moved it up 30 years, I mean, that would give us everything we would need, you know?
And I think that, as on Bill's point, I think it's certainly within our jurisdiction to make a recommendation to the legislature that they're granting cycle be moved up so that we can evaluate what the demand is and for the program and the number of quality projects out there. Wes?
On this legislative guide, give me a little background. Where does this come from? I'm referring primarily to page 3, where it seems like we've been kicking the definitions of enhance, protect, and restore around for the last year, and now they're saying that remove from broader DNR, and we're putting these definitions in there.
Wes, good question. I'm going to defer the response to Janelle and or Greg, who are staff for the committees that are working on this. So maybe you could help clarify the background behind this, where this is in the process. Janelle, you want to give it a try?
Sure. What they've agreed to, according to this draft, is in Chapter 172, the definitions that were passed by the legislature for enhanced protect and restore were coded in such a way that they applied to the DNR plus the Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails Fund, and the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And what they're stating here is that they are proposing to remove the definitions from the broader DNR, the Chapter 84, and the Parks and Trails and Clean Water. Then they would just apply for the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
When you say they, who are they?
The Cultural and Outdoor Heritage Council, Mary Murphy's Committee.
That's going to cause some problems.
You know, kind of members had heard this before the meeting started. There was a hearing last night. Bill and I attended it. It was a hearing of that committee. Rick sat in as you're an ex officio member of that committee, Rick. I don't have the agenda in front of me, but if I recall, the first part was to get public comment on the definitions of protect, enhance, and restore. Secondly, they received an update on the sales tax, and as Bill mentioned earlier, there was apparently a $20 million discrepancy between the numbers that their analysts had and what we heard from the Office of Management Budget a week ago. And then the last item that I can recall was an update on where things are in the Culture Arts Fund, the Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails Fund, and then Bill and I were there representing you all in the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The questions were, there was quite a bit of time spent around the definition. There was at least one member who felt that the definitions we used weren't the right definitions, even though I think as everyone knows from the history that the Senate Majority Leader and the chair of that committee on the floors of the respective houses stated that they gave us the authority to use the definitions we developed a year ago that this council as a whole unanimously adopted for this round. But so that was one issue. There was an issue about the council's take on the Emerald Ash Board, and I stated, as I stated back in July, that the council reviewed that proposal. We did not recommend it for funding, but we did not take a position in opposition to the legislative appropriation. And the third issue had to do with, I guess, where these projects are located around the state, metro versus outstate Minnesota. So a lot of the same issues that we've heard over the past probably 9 months or so. Rick, you were in the committee. Anything else you want to add regarding that?
I think I'm going to go back on the $20 million. The issue there, I think, was new data that had just come in. So the $20 million was from the November forecast. So that's below what we were getting in terms of. And I asked for income tax and all the other taxes, but it was sales tax.
But it was all sales
tax. All sales tax. So that issue is a $1.2 billion shortfall. That forecast, we've got numbers coming in below that already. So that was one concern. With the definitions, I would strongly encourage folks to listen to the tape. This is a public meeting that was noticed. People are there and given the opportunity to testify. Some very strong opinions from legislators about these issues. What Janelle referenced is actually, I think, a change that some folks were looking for. This does not apply to all things within that section of the statute. Apply to the heritage. What is an existing law? What is in law, not what is being proposed, but what is in law.
Scott?
Not having been there, my question would be, can somebody explain to me the rationale of exempting virtually all of the other entities from having to use these definitions and holding our projects and our recommendations to a different standard than all the rest of the habitat and game, fish, and wildlife work that's being done in the state? Why are we operating or have been asked to operate under a different set of guidelines than everybody else?
I can't answer that. Rick, can you answer that?
Because the DNR statute that's cited references all the a wide range of DNR statutes beyond just purchases. It references statutes that relate to policies. So it's referencing in the law, it's referencing, correct me if I'm wrong here, correct, Janelle, but it's referencing a wide range of statutes that don't necessarily apply to those definitions. You may have, there may be even like snowmobile or snowmobile studs, things like that that are referenced by inference in that statute. In addition, the clean water portion that's referenced, or the parks and trails portions that are referenced, you may be laying pavement that doesn't apply to the statute that's referenced. So it's the connection between the statute that's referenced and all the other policies and programs that are in law.
Scott,
one follow-up. What is it about the council's definitions that this committee has What is it specifically about our definitions that they dislike so much? That they prefer these? What's the big, the sticking points in our definition?
To be very specific, is that protection equals acquisition. Many legislators do not believe that protection is only acquisition. I do not believe that the constitutional definition of protection is only acquisition. I believe that acquisition can be protection, but I believe that protection is broader than that. And that opinion is shared by many legislators. The definition that the council uses says that protection is only acquisition.
And members, let's just be clear, this council affirmed these definitions about a year ago unanimously, and again we did that when we put out our call for proposals unanimously. There was no dissension. So I just want to make that clear, that as a group of 12 members, these are the definitions that collectively we agreed to moving forward with the agreement between the House and the Senate leadership on this issue. Any further, Scott?
One last question then, and then maybe move on. If the issue was with the definition of protection, okay, what then brought about the changes in definition of enhancement or restoration? Because those definitions changed as well.
Rick, you want to try that one?
I think the definitions that are in statute, the legislative process felt those were better and more broad definitions that applied to the way that enhancement and restoration could be used. That it putting the concepts of ecosystems in there rather than single species or individual tract type of things was a more appropriate language for interpretation of the Constitution language to protect, restore, and enhance.
I don't think we have single species in our definitions for tract specific.
I'm saying that ecosystems is a broad, when putting that in statute, I know that you're not having single species in there, but having ecosystems in there is a broader definition that allows for a broader interpretation.
Terry.
Rick, let me ask, the problem that I really have with this protect definition here is it seems to me it just opens up, it just expands sort of geometrically the kinds of things that could be included. Did the committee, or in your sense, for folks who feel strongly about this definition being what we ought to use, are they being exposed to that argument that there comes a point at which protection is so broad that it's meaningless? I mean, and then we end up with the inch deep and a mile wide sort of operation. Is there any concern about that?
Mr. Chair and Darby, I think that the concern is that we would allow, that you should allow, that the legislature, with governor's signature, should allow things beyond acquisition. That acquisition is a tool, but that enforcement is a tool, compliance is a tool. There are other tools beyond only acquisition.
Any other comments on that? Wait, we need to move on.
I'm going to just ask for your opinion. Since you were at the meeting last night, and knowing full well that depending on the location of any kind of meeting, the input is going to be different. And we were talking about the comments and the tone basically of the meeting. Would it have been different if that same meeting would have been in Grand Rapids and the people in the Grand Rapids area, for instance, being present at that meeting?
I don't know, Wayne. You know, I participated in public meetings in a former life all around the state. Clearly, the venue and where it's located does have an impact. But whether it would have been back to the discussion, I don't know. Ellen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, on that point, was there any public testimony, and from whom?
I came in late. There was some. Bill was there for the entire meeting.
Yes, there was public testimony. This was the second opportunity for public testimony in this committee. There was one earlier this fall, and then this one. And notice, there was one member of the public who argued for broader definitions. There was one member of the public representing various groups that argued for narrower definitions. The chair began the meeting by reading a letter and referenced in each packet. There were two letters relating to the issue of definitions. But what I'm referencing here is a discussion among the legislators. These are discussions among the legislators at the table in public, both responding to members of the public providing input, but also expressing and discussing the issues relating to these issues.
Ellen.
Mr. Chair, and let me just, Rick asked you a question. Are these definitions in the guide the same ones that the House passed last year? Are they identical?
Correct.
And I should just comment that as a member of the conference committee last year, what I tried to do was find a compromise and try to meet the concerns of the House, which was to allow something broader than just acquisition and to incorporate the concept of ecosystems, because that's what science would tell us to do, but to not change, you know, dramatically the fundamental concerns that the council had. I mean, I don't see why we can't find a middle ground that could work for all of us. And, you know, I'm really getting tired of this sort of back and forth. It's so unproductive. And I don't want to go into the legislative session this way with, we say tomato, you say tomato. We should try to find common ground. So I'm just going to make a pitch for that and offer to help. And maybe, Rick, you and I can help to do that with the House members, between the House and the Senate, so that we don't get into confrontations. It'd be better to try to work on that.
Ellen, thanks for sharing those comments. I echo those wholeheartedly. I think all members do. In terms of the process, as Bill mentioned, the committee is looking for comments by the end of this month. We aren't going to be able to do that. You saw this for the first time just a half hour ago. We don't have a meeting scheduled until January. I'm talking to Greg a bit about this and Bill yesterday. Greg, you had a good suggestion, I think, given the fact that in the conference committee, initially it was the House and the Senate was to develop this guidebook, and then it was amended to include the council as a consultant on this. I think at the point, my recommendation is at the point where the House and the Senate get together to work out the details of this guidebook, this is a House position, I think that's when the council, it might be most productive for it to weigh in at that point, where we have those two bodies that are working on the guidebook. Right now we have one proposal. I haven't seen a Senate proposal. And I think to do that now would not be the most productive use of our time. We can't, given our schedule, but I think it makes more sense from an effectiveness standpoint to weigh in and be part of that discussion once all three parties are together to iron out the details. Rick?
I think there was quite a bit of discussion, and it's important to put in the context of this discussion, between members. There were a number of members who did not know what happened at the end of the session. And there was, a discussion and questions about what went down, what was agreed to, who did what when, and what that means for the future. And so I think that discussion, although it's been talked about before in meetings and in open meetings, there was more detailed discussion between members about that last night.
Any further comments? Scott?
I have one question. It's a different subject matter.
Yep, please.
I know we have a meeting on the 7th, okay? We're making allocations today. Is today's meeting or the meeting on the 7th where we need 9 of 12 members to vote yes on our appropriations? Is that going to be done today or is that going to be done on the 7th?
It's going to be done on the 7th. So the bill that we will be forwarding to the legislature and to the governor's office for the legislative consideration will be the decision that needs a minimum of 9 votes.
On the 7th.
Right.
Okay.
All right. You're
the line.
That's the question.
Okay, well, we may need to rethink then that meeting on the 7th, given that, because that is a critical decision of this council, and we can't afford to have any council members not there. Not for the matter of 9, but we want every member to weigh in on the bill that's going to be forwarded to the legislature. So, Bill, we need to take that under advisement. Is there any member who can't make the 13th? We've already had that in place. David, you can't as well.
Yeah, the week.
What's the 13th? That's the one.
Well, that was a placeholder. Yeah,
day of the week, the 13th.
It would be Monday.
A Monday?
Okay.
Wayne?
In this one, if I recall, we cannot vote. We have to be present.
coming to this authority council, but my recollection is that the laws have changed on that.
Greg?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Director, I'm not familiar with exactly how that would work as far as, I thought in your bylaws, but that's only for officers, I think, that you allow for proxy voting. I don't think in the vote on a bill that you allow for proxy voting.
I would have to check. Last session, my recollection is the laws dealing with telephone meeting public bodies were amended to allow telephone attendance. But I need to review it. I was not prepared for that question today. Mr. Chair?
West.
Don't forget also that on the 7th there's an open forum. DNR roundtable on the 8th and 9th for the very good meeting held with the roundtable. And is there a problem with, there's not a problem, I would presume, with the forum being present at the roundtable?
No.
There is a problem with the forum being present and getting information or making decisions or things like that. There is a question as to what proximity is the quorum has to be in.
We just can't sit next to each other.
So space yourself up.
So are we going to try for a different date? I mean, is that what we're after?
We need to take that under advisement. We're kind of doing behind the scenes now, trying to figure.
I'm
going to
okay.
Did everyone have their calendars handy in case we need to on the fly look for an alternative meeting? Everyone's got, all right. So during our break, I think Bill and staff need to do some informal polling about, because it really is critical that we have all 12 members here at that meeting. Wayne, did you have
just one more, and that was maybe down the road here we can figure out a way so that when we do have to have these votes, that we can do it in a fashion so we don't have to be present. Is there a way to do it by mail and have your signed signature on it or something so that you could put it out by email? Because actually, it's a pretty expensive meeting to come in for 2 hours to look at some words and then say, okay, let's go home. You know.
On that point, Greg, Janelle?
As Bill mentioned, Mr. Chairman, it's generally not been allowed to have voting by proxy or to be not present. There have been some specific changes with regard to telephone, and I think there's also the video type of but I'm not sure exactly what those requirements are. There may be an opportunity for I know telephone has not been allowed in the past, but it's not that it's been changes in that. I think that the video ones have been allowed as long as there's an open meeting room where the public can come and see what's going on and can actually see the people that are there. The telephone one, as far as I know, is new. That's something that Mr. Becker and Janelle and I can check into after the meeting or sometime during the day.
Thank you. Scott?
Well, I remember when I missed the meeting in June, you know, and we were voting by proxy for officers and stuff. We were under the assumption that after 8-1 that you could vote by phone for council business. That was what we had come up with when we were dealing with that issue back in June. So I think we will be able to vote by phone if the information I got was correct at that time.
Rick?
I think the other thing to look at, Bill, is we did adopt Masons were a legislative body, so we operated with the rules that were adopted, whether they allow that type of, we're going to make recommendations on $56 million if being in person is important
to that. Any other discussion? This has been helpful. I guess, Bill, at this time, what are the plans?
I'm going to turn that over to Sandy, who's taking care of the plans.
All right, Sandy?
Okay, house photography, and we'll be taking photographs. And it's room 77, directly behind this hearing room. When everybody gets their headshot done, we will head over to the Capitol, where we'll catch up with Bob Schroeder for a group photo on second floor in front of the House chamber.
Can't you come over here? Since there's more of us than him.
That was determined by the photographer as a good location for a group shot.
Okay. Very good. Okay, so everyone needs to go back here for shots and then over to the Capitol.
Yep.
All right. And for members of the audience, we should be back in business by about 10:30. So we're going to recess for 45 minutes. We'll be starting up again at 10:30. Just Heritage Council. Remember, we are now on agenda item number 5, which is the allocation and recommendation funding process. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to take this in two steps. If you recall, last year we agreed upon a set of projects and a dollar amount, and then we proceeded to develop language to implement or to recommend implementation of those projects. Today, I would like to do something similar in that the first order of business I would like is to take a motion on an agreement on the projects that we recommend for funding and the amount of those projects. And we'll take a roll call vote for that so we have it on record of the members' positions on those projects. And then after that has been taken care of, if you note on the spreadsheet that Sandy and Bill and Heather put together, on the notes side, there are a number of notes associated with the different projects. I want to have a time for particularly those members who made those comments, but for the council to hear kind of their thoughts behind it. So it gives direction to staff about how to put together the appropriations bill that the executive committee is going to meet shortly after the first of the year, and then we'll come back and look at it on the 7th. So I'd like to take it in two steps. David?
I normally agree with everything you say, but there are some of these things which what we decide in terms of the notes have an impact on whether or not you would vote to approve or disapprove or what amount might be allocated. And I'm not sure you can completely separate them.
Yeah, I thought, David, just in response to that, I thought about that, and I guess my answer would be is when we meet on the 7th and we have some rider language, if someone, if a member does not, cannot live with that language, I think then we either have to make a change or suggest a change in the appropriations or else the member would need to vote no. I'm not sure. I don't know how else to handle it because we do need to give some direction to staff to put together this bill.
No, I'm saying when we make the decision for the allocation, some of the notes should be incorporated into that, and we shouldn't have a discussion after we've made an allocation as to which notes to include or not include.
Okay. Now,
for example, you know, if you take the first project and use me as the guinea pig, you know, my note was, I don't think we need to fund 3 years there. We just need to fund the first year request. Now, I may be right or be wrong in that, but if we're talking about this amount of money over 3 years versus 1 year, I think it would have an impact on whether people would support this. And so I think you have to some degree, factor in notes as you're making the allocation and not wait until after we've done that work.
Other members' thoughts on this?
I think somewhat related to that is when we go with the average, and this is what I brought up in the last meeting, you could have one foot in zero water, you know, freezing water, and 1 foot in boiling water. And if that were in the middle, should some of these, I can see higher funding if there's some language out there defining that appropriation. There's others that I think you could reduce as well. So I'm not sure about the average on. Clearly, we have some that are all 12 people voted this budget and some dollars, and then we get into some different. But even among those 12, where projects are already voted for, it looks like there's some discussion on each one.
Well, members, this is for our discussion. This is a starting point. When we proceed, I'd like to get a motion to put this spreadsheet on the table for discussion. But it's our prerogative to modify this if we see fit. Again, I would just like to hear any other members' comments. I'm trying to figure out the best way we can proceed in a fairly organized fashion about it. David, I certainly understand your concern. You know, it might be that as we go through this, if there is something that you simply can't live with, you know, make a note on the record about the use of the money.
Well, I would think that we could have a motion to approve the list, whatever you want to put the cutoff, so it's on the table, and then a discussion about each project with a determination and an attempt to find both an amount and any conditions that might make sense about that particular allocation. I suspect it won't take that much time to do that, but we're going to have some discussions about, as Rick would say, the up or down, as well as any conditions about each one of these to do with our job intelligence.
Okay. So what you're suggesting is really a blend of what we would hope to do partly on the 7th, some of that discussion occurring today.
I would hope so, because I think that on the 7th we want to make sure that we haven't missed any language, but I think today we want to make sure that we have a general agreement about what the allocation would be and for what.
Well, let's proceed down that path and see how it goes. I mean, if you look at the spreadsheet, I mean, one thing that, and Bill's going to walk us through it, is that there's a lot of consensus here. I mean, if you look around the table and you look at the number of allocations made by individual members to a project, I mean, we are a lot more together than we are apart on these projects. So maybe this is a concern that's unwarranted on my part, Dave. So let's proceed down that path. We'll see how it goes. So I guess at this time I'd like to ask Bill just to explain the two sheets, because you have two sheets in front of you, and then we'll get a motion on the table to recommend incorporation of the spreadsheet into the appropriations bill, and then that'll start our discussion. Bill?
I'd like to start with the sheet titled Member Ranking Summary, FY 2011 LSOHC. And this ought to be familiar with you. It is each individual member's allocation, nothing more, nothing less. There are two members who show conflicts, Jim Cox on line 20, and David Hartwell has three conflicts, lines 18, 29, and on the back page, line 35, or project ID, project number 35, excuse me. Are there any questions about what this represents? This is the way it will go on the website. Okay. The other sheet is the summary of the first sheet. And I want to take you through two projects. First of all, project number 5. The first 5 columns are evident, the project number, the project title, the manager's first name, last name, and organization. When you get to column 6, that's the amount they requested. So the Board of Water and Soil Resources requested $18 million for the RIN program. 12 people allocated one or more dollars to that project, and the overall average of those allocations was $6,895,415, which, using the financial standard of rounding down, provides a council allocation of $6,895,000. As you move through this, we will have Heather at the personal computer to enter changes in the council allocation field so that we can keep a running total. The running totals are shown at the top of the page, allocated above the notes and council allocation columns, and the remaining to be spent under the overall average number selecting columns. If you turn the sheet over, you will run through a few peculiarities on the project number 18. You'll note that there's a conflict of interest with David Hartwell, and the conflict of interest is accounted for in the average by taking David out of the denominator. That has an odd effect of having our overall allocation from this mathematical exercising exceeding our target. But that's accounted for in the fact that on the back page, below Project 7, is a dotted line
And that signifies all those projects that did not get a majority of the members allocating money to them. So the one that's, the ones that are on the bubble, so to speak, in basketball terms, are project numbers 32, 35, 39, and 15. We can take motions until we allocated the full $56,264,000, which is will be shown in the allocated section of the banner. Are there any questions? Oh, this is a little complex. Are there any questions about what we've got here? It
should look familiar to you. This is essentially the same exercise we went through about 10 or 11 months ago. Any questions for Bill? Hearing none, I guess what I would like to do then is entertain a motion then to adopt the spreadsheet with the amount allocated of $53,973,000. That would be the council allocation on the entire first page and through, as Bill mentioned, Project 7 on the back page to be incorporated into our appropriations bill that the council will be reviewing in January and finalize. So we have a motion on the table now to adopt this spreadsheet with the projects and the amount allocated by the council through Project 7. So that means we have $2,291,000 left to allocate. That's open for allocation. So, member, at this time, I would open the discussion. Helen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a little surprised to see the lower ranking of number 35, the Lower Mississippi River Habitat, that it only received five members support. Well, there was one conflicted member. To me, that's a really important project, and it's an important area of the state, and it's an important area of habitat. And I was trying to pull out our RFP. I haven't really looked at it yet, but I was going back through it to make sure that it was focused on land, not just on the river. And going back and looking at number 35, it says 268 acres of forest will be protected, 330 acres of forest restored, 40 acres of wetland protected, 377 acres of wetland restored, and 40 acres of prairie restored, including goat prairies. I guess I'm wondering if members want to speak to that, if those who didn't support it, if there's a particular reason why. But I'd like to make a motion to put some money into that project. But I'd like to get maybe some thoughts on it. If there's some things I don't see here, but to me it's a really important area of for protection and an area geographically that I think we've kind of ignored to date.
Member comments in response to Ellen's request? Right.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't allocate funds to this, and it's not because I don't think the projects that are involved in it are valuable, but if you look at overall DNR's requests, some of their more programmatic requests, the big global ones, I think, are going to overlap with these a lot. The goat prairies, for instance, was a key component of the grassland project that Mr. Penny from the DNR had recommended. So that was why I made the decision that I made. I certainly don't have any negative feelings towards the importance of the projects that were involved in this proposal. I just thought that there's a pretty good chance that the DNR is going to cover those with other allocations that they've requested from us.
Other member comment. Rick, please.
I was just going to ask staff if they have broken down those that are in the motion. We got some summary of region.
We have not done that. Mathematically scanned it, and that's the extent of it. If you would like, we could try to do that a little bit quickly.
Other comments? Derby.
Yeah, I did indeed support that project, and not because I thought it was perfect, but I thought it was important that we get something going down there. And I don't know, maybe, Ryan, maybe you're right. Maybe it does sound over right. It seemed to me that the DNR aquatic stuff was pretty much focused, much of it in the Northeast, and the the issue of the river is the Mississippi is pretty important, and what they wanted to do was important. So I didn't give it a lot of money. But at least I thought we'd get it started. We'll get the process rolling down. The other issue, and I tried to make a comparison, just sort of seeing where, I don't know, we as council have not taken a position on you know, the degree to which we feel any need to distribute somewhat equally across the five regions. I think we decided we were going to go on project quality. But it looked to me like the Southeast was the one out of the five units that had much less stuff sort of passed on through. And it's true, a number of these projects are multiple. I mean, they cross all five units. And that certainly boosts the Southeast area's money. Actions that will happen in the Southeast. But that was part of my thinking, I guess, as well as the need to get in down.
Scott, please.
And my contention or my thought process when I made no allocation to this was in their presentation they made, they talked about, you know, the major tributaries of the Zumbro Rivers, and I think there's a lot of work that can be done upstream first, but you need to get those upstream projects finished and completed before you can work in the downstream reaches of the watershed. And so I'm hoping that the allocations that we're making, I mean, if the DNR does overlap or whatever, that they'll work in the upper reaches of the watershed and work their way down, and that's why they didn't get any money from me.
Wayne.
Not to minimize this one, because we don't have an actual motion for this one, but number 32 is, we did receive 6 votes on this one with allocation and put budget, and my way of thinking was that we should probably look at these at least going down the list to see whether people still want to allocate money to the ones in sequential order.
Ellen, let me give you my take why I didn't, and it had very little to do with the merits of what they were proposing. If you recall, when this presentation was made to the council, the question was asked, what's the minimum amount that you would need to make this project viable? And they responded in writing as well as verbally, 80%. So as I looked at this, it was either allocating $4 million and some change, or it wouldn't be a viable project. And so that's why I couldn't justify, given the other projects that we have in front of us, allocating $4 million. And that's, in fact, if you want to see where that statement is made on their questionnaire follow-up that they provided, it's on number 3 at the bottom of the third page. It's the last line of that third page. Other comments on this one? Rick?
I had provided some dollars. We're still in the Southeast. I provided some dollars there. And I wrote, I think, the comment of the target towards most critical floodplain acquisition. I think that, you know, in the variety of presentations we had some folks that had a lot of printed material that showed us the scientific value of that. This particular one verbally told us about some of the scientific areas up in there. I guess what I would ask is if, and what I thought in saying the most critical floodplain is if there were unique special areas in there, I was more supportive of funding acquisition for those rather than the engineering for the island preparation. I think that's a longer term thing. We had some testimony that there were a variety of threatened or endangered or species of concern in that area in some of those tracts. I, in a broader picture, don't want to get the council or the legislature specifically picking tracts as much. But maybe that's something when we get into that discussion about those other ones, if there's people here from that area, if the council is willing to put that one back in, is if they can target some unique scientific areas.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm looking through this, and I agree with you about the 80% is a problem. I'm looking on page 9 where I don't know if this is their original questionnaire or their original, it's their original application that says the partner, I mean, it has an enormous number of partners working on it. It says the partners recognize it will take 15 years or longer to complete all of the acquisition and restoration projects that are anticipated. And they also say that in the section that you referenced, that under the 80%, that what they would do with 80% is 7 acquisitions of 900 acres and then start working on some of the engineering and the pool work that you had talked about. And I would be interested in maybe funding some of those acquisitions, targeted acquisitions, and I think it seems to me that would be foundational work that they could start, at least to get them started. So I don't know if there is anyone here who could speak to whether
is the project
they turned
manager,
down.
Is the project manager, Mr. Schlagenhoff, here?
Yes, great.
Okay.
Do you mind coming to the table, please? Good morning. If you could, for the record, introduce yourself and your affiliation.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Tim Schlagenhoff. I'm with the Minnesota DNR, and I'm representing the Lone Mississippi River Habitat Partnership.
So, Mr. Schlagenhoff, you heard the conversation. I think probably the first question is, last week the question was asked, and you had it writing about the 80% really being a minimum needed for this project. Could you respond particularly to Senator Anderson's concern or question about, you know, could this be done with less than 80%, and if so, what?
Yes, the 80% was what we felt was needed to maintain all elements of the proposal, which would include some elements of acquisition, restoration, some of the island drawdown design work, and then in a position to help us with that. The 7 parcels identified were those that were adjacent to existing state or federal lands that would help improve habitat connectivity. And we talked about those as being priorities for us. We could do fewer acquisitions. It would connect less areas within the overall Lowell Root River and Zumbro River areas. But the 80% was based on those 7 priority acquisitions and continuing some work in those other areas. So there would be an ability to do some acquisitions with less funding, but it would not address all of our priority sites.
Well, Mr.
Alan?
Chair, thank you. That's helpful. I guess what we need to know is, given what you've heard from the council and the fact that it's ranked pretty low in terms of not making the cut at this point, I mean, what dollar amount would allow you to do something of significance in acquisition while you work to the future?
Yeah, council members, the acquisitions ranged in size from 15 to 350 acres at an estimated cost of ranging from $70,000 to $1.4 million. And there are, there's a 166-acre parcel that was ranked 6th on our list. There's a 83-acre parcel that was ranked 2nd. So that one was $376,000. So there are parcels within that range up to $1.4 million. That would allow us to acquire the largest parcel in the area and connect up to existing habitat.
So, Mr. Chair, it seems to me this project, I mean, this is a really ambitious project that involves sort of bringing the Mississippi back to the state that it was pre-settlement almost. That's what you're talking about, or at least that's the way I understand it, and recreating a floodplain where the water can go back, stay on the land and circulate in wetlands and create all the associated habitat that goes with that. And I'd really like to help you start that process. And that big picture vision that you have, that's going to take a lot more funding than we're, you know, and probably some different sources for some of the different pieces of it over the long run. But I guess I'd like to propose that that $1.4 million might be a good place to start. And if members are willing to vote on that now, we could do that unless people want to go and sort of go in order. I want to put it out there and as a placeholder at a minimum. And then, you know, we could go back and revisit the St. Louis River first. But I guess I feel pretty strongly that we need to support the work in the southeast part of the state on the Mississippi.
Wayne. I think for now, I think we don't need your testimony further, but if you could be available in case it comes up again, that would be great.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Wayne?
I know when we were first looking at the directions on this, again, and the process we're going to use now, we're looking at projects that receive 10, 11, 12 votes and were underfunded. Isn't it probably more prudent to take the remaining balance of dollars and apply it to the projects which are the most important one, which had most of us agreed upon, and not go down to the lower end of the things where we didn't get the votes? And I guess what I'm suggesting is that's where that $2,291,000 be spent is on the projects which received at least 10 or more votes.
But I think actually a discussion among us can pluck out some of that, and you couldn't preclude that. Wes?
One of the things that bothered me is that the Minnesota River is the culprit in a lot of this sedimentation flowage, but we're going downstream from that, and we're protecting downstream, not really attacking the problem. It's like the border. I don't disagree just about the value of the project, but I think we're out of order as far as which ones we want to do first. And I agree totally with Wayne that I think we should look at the top priority projects and work our way down, and we will get to discussion because there are several other ones on the bottom ranking that I would like to discuss more thoroughly too, but maybe we should try to keep it in sequential order at the highest priority.
David? Sorry.
No.
Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think this is the right time for us to look at overall balance. And that's something that I think is important. I think it's important to think about, and we, when we put together our priorities, we thought about that as well. And Les, you're absolutely right about the Minnesota River, but I'll have to remind all of you what we keep saying in our committees. We've spent almost $1 billion on trying to improve the water quality in the Minnesota River over the last couple of decades. And that's... we can't wait until we completely solve that problem before we work downstream. I just think we have to have complementary strategies and trying to work on the floodplain in the lower Mississippi. It just seems like it's such a critically important part of our state. And I don't want to go back to the legislature with a bill that for 2 years in a row doesn't really focus on issues related to one major region of our state.
Wes?
This is a critical project, you, Ellen, and I know that. But also, if I would have taken one step further, we've didn't put in the list two very, very important projects in the Red River Valley. Mm-hmm. We never even let them onto this initial funding list. Now, in the Red River Valley, we're dealing with billions and billions of dollars of destruction that's occurring right now. So as far as a matter of priority, as far as maintaining sediment control in the lower Mississippi and restoring some basins, I think we've got a heck of a lot of work to do on the western part of the state in the Red River Valley first. So let's put it into the proper perspective as far as the entire state and what values are we going to be obtaining by doing this project versus not funding at this time.
I have a completely different issue. I don't want to change topics. I think when we look at the motion that's here, putting a number of projects in, and this is my concern on taking the average, that I think we need to be mindful of the economic situation that we have out there. When we do the acquisitions, that they're unique areas that are scientifically special, that there's a need for those, that they could be lost, and they have some type of high value or high quality that justifies that acquisition. And some of the programmatic allocations, where there's programmatic allocations, I think one of our priorities was new restorations on existing land. We have that as one of our priorities. In terms of the economy that's out there right now, we're going to be doing restoration in the Black Mountains, and we're going to do restoration in forests, doing restoration prairies. That's going to be putting people to work and improving the quality on existing lands. You could get that done relatively quick to have it started, so people are
moving the invasive species, replanting, buying seeds, buying trees. So my concern on the whole motion is when we get into the details of each of those projects, speaking only for myself, I'm concerned if we have a lot of acquisition that is not based specifically on here's a unique area when we could have put the dollars into restoration, which is one, and which I believe is one of our priorities, restoration of existing public lands.
Further comments? Members, we have $2.3 million that are on the table. Ellen?
Well, I guess I'll just make a motion just to get things moving here.
All right.
I'm going to move that we allocate $1.4 million into number 35 Lower Mississippi River Habitat Restoration Partnership.
So Senator Anderson moves that $1.4 million from the remaining $2.291 million be allocated to Project 35.
You know, Mr. Chair,
Ellen, please.
I apologize. I think I should make that $1
million
because the amount I want to be consistent with the recommended number here.
So the motion is to allocate $1 million, which would leave just south of $1.3 million remaining should this motion be adopted, that would be available. Discussion on the motion. Rick?
Mr. Schleichen, come up again just to validate that there is not appropriate and that there is something unique.
Question.
Did you get the question?
Could you please repeat it for me?
The question would be if you were given $1 million in terms of a recommendation. Would that be applied to a tract where there is a unique scientific reason that the state should invest those dollars in, or would it be applied to a variety of tracts where there's, again, that scientific justification?
The $1 million would leave the two top priority tracts off the table, but would allow us to acquire an 83-acre parcel that would have 83 acres of wetland restoration that would be in the floodplain of the Wood River. A 70-acre parcel that would include 40 acres of wetland restoration and 30 acres of prairie restoration, which would also be in the floodplain, and then a smaller parcel. So, yes, those would be in our priority project area and help us move towards restoration of that lower floodplain area.
Mr. Schleichenhoff, where on the list are those two parcels?
That would be the parcel, the third parcel.
This in terms of priority order?
Yeah, in our priority ranking amongst the partnership. It would be the third, the fifth. Without doing the math here, and there's a 65-acre parcel also that would be the sixth priority. So third, fifth, and sixth approximate priority.
Bill?
So, Mr. Schleichenhoff, are those parcels that would be targets in the council's southeast section?
They would all be in the Root River, yes.
Rick?
Follow up, Mike. Is there any, I'm here from the commissioner's office in DNR. We have a variety of DNR projects in front of us here, and I'd like some prioritization discussion from DNR on what they would like.
Is anyone from the commissioner's office, Mr. Meyer, or anyone else who can speak on behalf of the department?
I can speak to you.
Hi, Grant, if you could again just your name and your affiliation for the record.
Sure, for the record, Grant Wilson, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Prioritization, could you be more specific?
Rick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have, in the motion that's here, we have a variety of DNR projects that are that may be recommended. We have accelerated prairie grassland restoration. We have conservation partners, legacy plant. We have the aquatic habitat project where DNR is the project manager. And this one is where DNR is the project manager. accelerated forest wildlife habitat for DNR Fish and Wildlife is the project manager, and the St. Louis, where DNR Goodwood Area Fisheries is the project manager. So, from DNR's perspective, they want the council to recommend projects in a variety of areas, or has there been any ranking or perspective or guidance given just in terms of what the DNR would like funding for when we have millions of dollars of requests from DNR?
Mr. Wilson? Mr. Chair, Councilmember Hansen, the requests that were put forward were not in any prioritized order. As is stated in the commissioner's letter to the council, they represent the need and capacity and opportunity that we see out there, but the agency leaves it to the council to recommend and prioritize.
Wes?
I think further discussion on this item is basically a distortion of the process that we had initially planned and going through. Well, we've got 22 projects before this that I think need the discussion. And if we get down to that one and we've got extra money left over, I think we should address it fully. But at this point in time, I think we're ignoring the wishes of the rest of the council, the majority of the council at this point, and I think we should move on.
So we have a motion on the table to allocate $1 million to Project 35. Is there further discussion on the motion? Ellen?
So, Mr. Chair, let me just clarify that the motion that David already made puts $53 million, I believe, on the table. That is the highest rankings of the council. And so, Les, I really think it's safe to say that the wishes of the council are being respected. We're talking about a very small percentage of the dollars remaining, whether we can make any adjustments. So I think that's perfectly appropriate, and that's why we vote.
Jim?
One comment on that, though, Senator Anderson. I think it gets the rest of these projects, especially number 32, if we already allocate the money before they get a chance to have the case made for the rest of these projects that haven't been allocated, it's kind of unfair because the money's already gone before we even get to them. So anything would be fair if we went through the whole bunch of them and then allocated the money?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was kind of waiting to hear if there would be any other motions, and there weren't. So I went ahead with my motion because, and I asked if people wanted to bring up the St. Louis River project, and I also think that project has some merit, and I'm open to that discussion. I think we just need to start somewhere, and I feel strongly that the Mississippi River, to me, the Mississippi River is just one of the most important areas for habitat protection, whether we're in Winona or whether we're in Itasca or in St. Paul. And I appreciate that the council is focusing on some of the different stretches of the Mississippi in this package, but I think we're leaving out a section. That's why I just really want, I just think it's important. So, this is the best way I can think of to make that statement by asking members to support it. If you have a different approach for process for what you'd like to recommend, I'm certainly open to other ideas. But I guess nobody's proposed an alternative motion. So
we have a motion on the table right now. Is there further discussion on that motion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of the motion to recommend allocating $1 million to Project 35 from the remaining $2.291 million, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Two
to three.
Did not pass. Motion
Chair,
was not.
I'd like to ask for a division.
Okay, division has been requested.
I need to raise hands.
So all those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. And the chair votes yes. So we have six members in favor, those opposed. Three in opposition. So the motion is adopted. So we have, at least for now, on the table, we have a $1 million allocated to Project 35, which Heather, you're making that change?
Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wilson, Mr. Fleckenhoff. And Wayne?
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we spend all the remaining balance of money on those ranking number 10 and higher.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table to allocate the remaining $1.291 million to those projects going down from the top of the list through Project 19. Anything more specific or just that is equally? What?
That's it for now. But we just, let's see where that vote would go. I just want to know whether it's, I don't want to spend any more time allocating money to the ones that didn't get any support in the beginning.
So, Wayne, I'm not sure that the motion has any enforcement. I mean, people can say whatever they want. We can either turn down motions for others. I guess I'm not sure that motion to limit discussion is enforceable. If you had a motion that was more specific to that remaining, so allocating the remaining dollars one way or another amongst those 10
okay,
11
Chair,
projects, I think that would be more helpful.
I move that we the balance of our budget be applied to Project 31.
So we have a motion on the table to allocate an additional $1.91 million to Project 31. Discussion on that motion.
We have a little discussion on the two notes that people put in and why they put those in and what they were trying to influence. One, we're talking about 31.
So, Mr. Representative Hansen, I believe that's you and me, and I guess I will start. One of the reason I suggested, or my priorities were shallow lake restoration and enhancing and restoring habitat on existing WMAs is because those were priority strategies that we identified. Not only a statewide priority, but also a sectional priority of the shallow lakes. That's not to say other activities can't go forward, but my preference would be that those would be given priority for funding. Rick?
And my concern then follows the chairs that we look at restoration and enhancement rather than acquisition. We can work on those. That was our priority.
Jim, please.
But Representative Hansen, sometimes acquisition is necessary to do the restoration and enhancement. It's part of the process. You can't do one without the other.
And I understand that. I'm saying if we have limited dollars, and this, even with this motion, I believe that doesn't take us to the fully asked for amount.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Norgaard. Ray, do you mind coming up to the table, please? Good morning. Again, I don't know if you heard the conversation, but the question is, with roughly $6.4 million, which would be allocated to your project, could you give us a breakdown? I guess the first question is, how much money is in there for enhancement and restoration of existing assets, being wetlands, associated uplands, and shallow lakes? Norgaard.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ray Norgaard, Wetland and Wildlife Program Leader from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We look at specific allocations for the request. I'm going to ask Mr. Snyder here from Ducks Unlimited to help.
Uh,
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
If we were to put a cap of 20%, say, I'm just pulling a number from the sky, towards acquisition, so you could acquire little pieces here and there that would make restoration possible, would that be detrimental to your request?
Mr. Chairman and council members, it would limit our ability to make the Moonshine Lake restoration viable in the context, I think. I'm just doing the math here. Bear with me.
So can you suggest a number that would create viability for that project as an alternative to 20%, which is a number I pulled from the sky? I think the concern is that I'm hearing from Rick and the chair that we don't want to see 100% of this money go into buying stuff and nothing going into restoration. So if you can help us, maybe it will help you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hartwell and council members, we'd be happy to do that. In our proposal right now, we are proposing to spend $2.1 million protecting wetlands and $1.2 million on protecting the prairies. That the proposal indicates a limited amount into protection or acquisition, with the breakdown being we requested some monies for conservation easements, but the bulk of that funding was for land acquisition in the Moonshine Lake Basin or other drained shell lakes. That those deals don't pan out to make restorations possible. So to answer your question, 20% would limit our ability to get the Moonshine Lake project done if it continues as we believe it will. I have to do the math here real quick to tell you what that exact percentage would be that we would need for acquisition, but it would be more like 30 or 35%.
So, Mr. Schneider, while you guys are crunching the numbers, I'm going to ask Bill to just, if you could, give the council a little bit more direction about this issue of money going to protection versus enhancement restoration.
If you will turn in your request books to request number 31, page 15 is the recommended fund allocation. And $218,000 is allocated to wetland restoration. And $4.184 million is directed to wetland enhancement for a total of non-acquisition request of $4.4 million. That needs to be looked at in context of the overall average, which is $5.2 million. So there's about, if they choose to retain all of the enhancement and restoration, there's $800,000 for acquisition. In developing their accomplishment plan for the recommended number, some of that money, subject to our approval, could be transferred into from enhancement and restoration to protection.
So did I hear you? $800,000 is the number?
$800,000 is the information is laid out if we ask them to maximize enhancement and restoration.
So if we were to say, instead of a percentage, no more than $800,000 to be spent on acquisition, would that be problematic for you?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hartwell, that would indeed be problematic. I didn't follow Mr. Becker's math there. Our request is for $7.841 million. Indeed, $218,000 is for restoration, but $4.184 million is for enhancement. So enhancement and restoration, as proposed, totaled approximately 56% of the grant request. So,
and with this motion on the table, that would leave approximately $1 million for protection. Jim.
Well, John, I mean, is that, it's not really a linear, though, correlation. I mean, you just don't take so much acquisition and still have so much restoration. That's just not the way it works, though, is it?
Schneider?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cox, that's correct. It would limit our ability to get the Moonshine Lake project done. We think we need about $2.5 million to make that viable. That's the land acquisition that we're proposing. There are no other fee title acquisitions proposed unless those tracks fall through the landowner's desires.
And members, just to clarify my comments, while I say priorities are on the shallow lake restoration and the enhancement restoration habitat on the existing WMAs, that is not at the exclusion of the things you just described, Mr. Schneider, to get particularly that particular project completed. I just want to make sure that enhancement and restoration of shallow lakes are front and center in all of the work that you do. Rick?
Thank you. I would oppose the motion, and I think this gets into what we'll need to do today. I think that the Reinvest Minnesota Wetlands Reserve Program match is better than the use of the dollars. I think that provides several dollars. We know that if we leverage additional dollars to bring them in, there could be real WRP money that's used in some of these areas in the shallow lake restoration areas. We will be leaving a lot of federal money on the table that could be used to meet the objectives that we have identified for the constitutional dollars. So I understand, Wayne, what you're doing, but I think that if we're going to add money there, I would rather add it to the investment. So if the motion passes, that would not necessarily be possible unless we take other costs.
Further discussion. We do have a motion, members, before us. Further discussion on the motion. Hearing none. The motion on the table is to allocate the remaining $1.192 million to Project 31. Hearing no further discussion. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. So, members, now we have allocated. Okay, a division has been requested. All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. We have seven in favor, and those opposed. So the ayes have seven, the nays four. The motion is adopted. So we have now allocated the money to these projects. We can certainly entertain motions to shift money around. Thank you, gentlemen. So the amount that we've allocated now is the amount that we set in our spreadsheet, $56,264,000. David.
I'd like to have a discussion about the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program. My suggestion for this, which I'd rather not make a motion, I'd rather have a discussion, first was that we go back to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to administer this for the 4% that they indicated they would do it at, which they confirmed in a note to the chair late last week, that they would continue to be happy to manage this program for 4% instead of 15%. The DNR wants to do it with, and I think it would be a more open process than we've experienced thus far. So that was my first comment, but I think there's enough angst about this program. We ought to have a discussion and talk about what we really want to do if we want to. And I don't doubt we want to continue it. The question is there a better way to continue it than what we've done? And the second part of my thought is, and I feel very passionate about this, we need to build a culture of philanthropy on the local level. And by giving away money with a 10-for-1 soft dollar match, we are not encouraging people over the long term to go out and figure out how to raise money. And I feel we should require a hard match that's something in the in the area of 3-for-1 or 4-for-1. So we would put up $4 for every one that was coming in, really to build a culture of raising money at a local level to support conservation. But I'd love to talk about things separately.
Okay, so really two issues that David has raised regarding Project 36, which is the Conservation Department's legacy grant program. I'm sure if Wayne or Les had their hand up first. Wayne's drinking coffee, it's Les. Les, you have the floor.
Okay, I heartily agree with you that we should be looking at building that cooperation through the private sector in the state of Minnesota. A lot of these projects, I feel, were on the approach of building bureaucracies. And I believe that the private sector, everybody got the letter from Senator Bach pointing out the critical nature of raising or building jobs within the state. Well, I think the way to increase the jobs in the state is through the private sector, not through adding people to the public sector or the government sector. I think it's a very, very important project. I think some of these small organizations in the field have the opportunity with that 10% matching grant, which was by far above a lot of the matching funds that were allocated to some of these other projects that we've looked at. It allows the DNR to work with the private sector, and I think your point about going back to the other grant manager is fine, but the DNR has a very strong capability with all their wildlife managers in 88 counties in the state that are ready to assist, help, direct, plan, and help administer these grants. So I think we would be cutting out a major workforce as far as letting this program succeed with the DNR not being a part of the grants manager. So I can see both sides of this, but I think we should limit the DNR administrative costs to probably that 5%, 5% value.
Ryan and then Darby.
I move to amend the amount for project number 36 to $4,160,000.
So we have a motion to. Could you repeat those numbers again?
$4,160,000. That would represent a $4 million grant program and a 4% administrative overhead.
So we have a motion on the table to reduce the budget that we've allocated for Project 36 from $4,386,000 to $4,160,000. Do you want any more specificity about?
I think you have to specify that it's specifically to limit the administrative cost to 12%.
Right. If you'd like me to add it to my motion,
yes.
Add it to the motion. That the accounting for that is $4 million for actual grants going out the door, $160,000 for administrative costs, which is 4%.
So we have a motion on the table to reduce that amount and restrict the administrative cost to 4% or $160,000. Is Leslie Tannehill in the office in the green room? Could you come down, please? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Leslie Tannehill, for the record.
Thank you. Did you hear the question, the motion?
Mm-hmm.
Could you speak to that motion in terms of how that would affect the program?
I think the biggest problem we'll have is that currently the cost for the two staff we have on now at 1.5 FTEs is estimated at $180,000 per year, and you're already cutting into that. And with the current workload we've got, that will make it really tough to do it at this kind of level of funding. We're hoping that through a 1 year of experience, we'll just have that experience, things will go better. But when you're also adding $4 million in additional grants, that increases the workload.
Darby.
Getting actually back to David's concern about indicating that NIFLF would be able to do it at 4%, which they certainly told us. My concern is they do not have the field staff, and I'm wondering, Leslie, if you could tell me what proportion of the total cost of this operation is time being spent by DNR people all over the state, and
can NIFWIC do with 4% and still do the local help that seems to be in a critical part of this?
Mr. Chair, Darby, I can't speak for what NIFWIC can do, but I can tell you that through the end of November, our field staff charged not to Outdoor Heritage Funds, but to other DNR funds, $55,000 for the Conservation Department grant program for time that they worked on that. I don't know of NIFWIC's capabilities, and I was trying to look through some meeting minutes from earlier in the year and see what NIFWIC had proposed, and I think it's I don't think they are putting in that much local contact as we have this fall and plan to continue, but I can't speak for them again and what they say this year.
And that's really my concern, that we want this program to work. We want it to be successful, and we want to have a lot of folks out there getting money, but by gosh, if we cut off that, it's too bad that the NIFWIC folks are not here to tip that, as long as we got into this discussion.
Ms. Tannehill, you received an appropriation from the legislature for fiscal 10 to administer this program. Do you have any projections about your unspent balance that could possibly be carried forward into fiscal 11? Do you have any sense of the magnitude of what that might be for administrative costs?
Denise is a budget pro expert on that part, and I'm sorry she's not here. They've seen her manage that meeting. I think in my files, my bill find something, but not right at this minute. I think we're going to be close to what our funding level was for this fiscal year on that. I'm sorry, I don't have a definite answer for you. I know that we have spent, for Jamie and myself so far this year, to about the end of November for administrative costs based on that $60 an hour professional services. There's been about $64,000, I believe, spent for that. And that did include developing the application system, some PR stuff, and a few other things.
Wes?
Mr. Chair, Leslie, we're on a learning curve this first year, and it's definitely going to be more expensive this first year. And I share Darby's concern that we don't have the experience with NIFWIC in the field to really ride her over this program in the initial first couple years. And the field staff that's out there in existence after the grant software has been written and so forth, your costs are bound to decrease after a period of time. Can you give us an estimate of what that first year cost is going to be reasonably, and then start looking at dropping that as experience is gained in this program?
Are you looking for the cost that our field staff billed or what the CPL staff billed?
Your staff, CPL.
I think that's going to be standard, at least fairly similar. We would like to modify our application system some to make it a little more user-friendly so people can log back in more than once, and also develop our reporting system onto the same sort of system. So that will take a little bit more time and time for our MIS staff for that. And if you still want to have people, which is Jamie and myself right now, that would be the rate that is listed as 180. What's 180? Yeah, I'm sorry, $180,000 for the fiscal year. So that won't change. Our field staff work, I don't know what that's going to be. You know, when you talk about this coming spring and summer, you're talking about the actual implementation of the grants. Our field staff really like working with the partners out there in the field, the smaller groups and larger groups too. But don't forget there are also potential projects on non-DNR lands. But we don't know what that'll take to get those projects implemented and reporting and monitoring other things that come with that.
Bill, a question. Recall about a year ago when we were just getting up and running, we had presentations, including people from the Department of Administration on granting programs. Bill, do we have any information about what typically state agencies that administer grant programs charge for administrative costs?
Mr. Chair, I had Heather Coop look into this. Heather, could you come to the microphone and tell us what you discovered, what you did, and what you found out?
Yeah, we looked at it in Heather Coop staff, Pivotal Science, Sam of the Heritage Council. We looked at two aspects of grant making, one internally and second for the grant recipients. To administer the grant, we found an average anywhere from 1 to 3%, with 5% on sort of the very high end. And that really depended upon whether the organization or agency was selecting the grants in addition to monitoring and evaluating them. on a recipient end, we found rates to administer grants anywhere from 10 to 25%, and that included the kinds of indirect or overhead costs associated with a grant making or grant project, such as IT, HR, marketing, financial accounting, those kinds of things.
Thank you, Heather. Bill?
Heather, so when you say on the recipient end, you mean the ultimate recipient who does the work, in our case, in the field?
Yes.
So that could be a rod gun club or a SWC or whoever.
Right, the nonprofit or state agency.
So 1 to 3 is typical for state agencies that run these programs, and there was an example of one that had as high as 5%. Jim?
I just, for Ryan's information, he might already know this, but last year the council did recommend NIFWIF, and I think the legislature not only changed that, but they also put an administrative figure in the legislation. I think it was their doing, not ours.
No, I understand that completely.
Members, we do have a motion on the table to reduce the administrative costs in Project 36 to 4%. So $4 million would be allocated to projects, $160,000 allocated to administration of the grant and program. Is there further discussion on the motion? Hearing no less.
Right now we've got an average of we've got 4.6 million recommended.
No, 4.386.
Okay.
So this would reduce it by about $226,000. But it would keep, the motion would be to keep the grant making at $4 million, but the administration of the grant program at $160,000 or 4%. Scott?
What I would like to see is, I mean, if we're going to have a motion that specifies an overhead or a management, that's fine. But I don't want to see the program actually lose dollars. I mean, if it's $4,386,000 and the overhead is going to be $186,000, then it would be $4.2 million. But to keep the program funded at its current level, not funded at a smaller amount, then we can still specify, I mean, if the motion would pass, the overhead or the administrative fee, but I don't want to see the allocation for that go down.
And you're gonna, so we do have one motion on the table that would reduce the allocation. So you either have a friendly amendment to that effect.
That wouldn't be friendly. No.
That would not be friendly. So we do have. So Scott, you'd have to take that up in a subsequent motion. So or move to amend the motion right now, because pending any or absent any further discussion, we're going to take up this motion.
Well, I would like to move to amend the motion to retain the funding for the Conservation Partners Program at its current level with whatever the council determines is a adequate administrative overhead, but not to reduce the contribution to the program.
Okay, so you need to be more specific about the last part. So I've got the current allocation. Are you saying that the administrative cost is flexible, or are you still...
No, I mean, if
it could be a percent. It could be 4% is the motion on the table now.
Well, I would make an amendment that says that the allocation stays at $4,386,000 with 4% of that total being allocated to overhead.
So we have a motion to amend the motion, and that amendment would be to keep the money, the allocation as is at $4.386 million, but at the same time capping the administrative cost at 4%. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion is adopted. So now we have a motion on the table to cap the administrative costs, not change the council allocation, keep that at $4.386 million, but cap the administrative cost at 4% of that appropriation. That's the motion on the table. Further discussion, Darden?
Yeah, I'd like to go back to Heather. You indicated that typically administrative costs were 1% to 3% in the entities that you looked at. Were those entities truly, is it truly apples to apples, that comparison? In other words, do those entities that have a 1% to 3%, do they have the equivalent of a field presence? I mean, it's not just folks in an office, but there are people out there that are having to help the folks who are making these requests
I don't know the answer to that question. My conversation and National Budget Office. And so I think we were talking specifically about at the agency level, what it would cost to administer the grant. We might discuss any kind of
quite frankly, that really scares me, because if we limit to the point where the DNR people or whoever would do this out in the field are not going to be there in the numbers and availability, we may end up with a lot of small, sporting men, sporting clubs and so forth, not have the help, not have the expertise to make this program what it ought to be.
I think a couple things we on this, and we've spent a lot of time on relatively small proportion of money, but I know the passion that people have for this particular project. The amount of money that we have here, we don't know what the results are yet. So we're making policy changes, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. There's a lot of opinions expressed, but we don't have the outcome in order to base those opinions in some cases. Secondly, if we decide to limit the administrative overhead for this one, would we be also limiting the administration to all the other projects to 4%? Would that mean that Pheasants Forever with the Prairie Heritage would only be able to get 4% for administrative costs? I think, or with the DNR and all the other projects, we are able to use 4%. I don't think we would. So then why would we on this?
Ryan? Mr. Chair, I think if we were creating a program where Pheasants Forever was administering a grant program, I could get on board with the 4%. But even with this administrative cap that we're proposing, 4%, we still know that there's going to be administrative costs that the grant recipients are going to have as well. We're not capping that. It's the administration of the grant program, I think, that the target is. Honestly, my motion was largely symbolic of a philosophical point that I think is still valid this year, even if the legislature disagreed with that position from last year. Being a new member, I just wanted to make sure that we reemphasize that same point.
David?
Well, I think we will run into trouble cutting the DNR to 4%. I think we should, but I think we've run into trouble with it. I think the question is, how can we have a national organization that runs grants programs around the country that's more than willing to do the work that we laid out for 4% and choose to have the DNR run that program at 15% to do the same thing? So I would vote against the motion, and then I would make a motion that we substitute NIFWIP for the DNR and let them do what they do successfully around the country for the price that they're willing to do it for, and not penalize the DNR, who doesn't have the overheads and the strategies in place, obviously, to run this as competitively as a private organization.
Mr. Chair,
on this point,
that would have been part of my original motion. I just don't think that putting the administrative entity was in play at this point in the process. But, I mean, that would have been my original motion.
Wait.
Isn't this what we did last year, and it didn't happen? Are we going to have any more success doing it this year and then having somebody set the budget for us at a different authority?
Wayne, you're on target. I mean, the reality is we did recommend NIFWIP from the program at 4%, and that was changed to the Department of Administration and 6.5%. They asked for 6%, and the legislature appropriated 6.5% to administer that program. Given the fact that we have the same representation in the House and the Senate this year, I have a hard time believing that things will be different, Wayne. I think, to your point, that things will largely be the same. But
if we want to go through the exercising our will, I suppose, it might work.
But,
I'm not sure.
David?
you know, they were assigned 6% last year arbitrarily by the legislature. I think it's very prudent for us to come back and say there is a better way to do this. 6.5% doesn't make the DNR happy. They want 15% to run this program. So let's run it as efficiently as we can by choosing someone who's willing to do the work at that price. If the legislature wants to spend more money, that's their choice.
When we were interviewing Nickwood last year, I believe they got three people in the state of Minnesota that could administer this grant program. And I'm afraid that switching horses in the midstream on this one, we're going to lose the whole thing. Again, Darby brought the point up, and I would question whether NIFWIS really has the capability of administering this across the entire state of Minnesota for 4%. You know, it sounds good, but can they do it? I don't know.
They've done it all over the country, in other places.
So, members, you know, they're really, I mean, we do have a motion on the table, but just to let you know that, and there's two ways to handle this. One is to, in our appropriations bill, change it back to NIFWIS and 4%. Another approach is to keep it with the department, cap at some level administrative costs, maybe that where the legislature was last year at 6.5%. And then in the transmittal letter that I will send to the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader and the Governor on our recommendations to point out that fact that, you know, last year we did recommend that the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation run the program. They indicated they were able to administer it for 4%. They have communicated that to me as late as within the last week that they are still interested and that they would still be able to administer the program under the initial terms of reference for 4%. And, you know, include that, you know, not in our bill, but in the transmittal letter that we recognize what the legislature did change that recommendation, but we still believe that the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation would be able to administer an effective program at a lower cost. So we have a couple of options. Bob.
You know, just as important to me is the amount that we're paying to have them take care of these grants, the DNR, is the fact that they're a major recipient of grants. And I think that's the biggest conflict of interest I've ever heard of.
We do have a more brick.
I would not support outsourcing existing Minnesota jobs during this time.
These are Minnesota jobs. They're people based in Minnesota doing the work.
Brick. Would be outsourcing existing state jobs to a nonprofit or for-profit foundation.
Further discussion on the motion. We do have a motion that would keep the allocated amount at $4.386 million, but cap administrative costs at 4%. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Okay. Further discussion. We've allocated the amount that is available to us. We haven't changed that.
I would make a motion that we require a $1 for hard match for the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program for every $4 in grant.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table to include in our rider language a hard match, and what was the amount, David?
$1 for every $4 in grant.
Discussion on the motion. Jim?
Well, David, I understand what you're trying to do here, but I mean, if you think this problem through, if you're going to do any kind of projects of any significance, let's just pick $100,000 for purpose of discussion. You take a small conservation group who's going to have to come up with $25,000.
$20,000. Okay. Challenge to do that.
But
it's not a good thing for them to do.
It's not going to happen, though, David. You look at what these smaller groups are making. If they make $5,000 a year through fundraising activities, that's a big year. Sure, some of them get up 15, 20, but all you're going to really do is limit the size of the project. So we're going to end up with a bunch of really, what we didn't want to do, postage stamp projects that they can afford. If you think these, at least speaking from the hook and bullet groups, if they're not making as much money as they possibly can right now, I think you're fooling yourself. They are, and they're just not going to be able to do business in any significant way at that 4-to-1 match. I think the match we've got now is appropriate.
Bill, could you refresh our memory? What is our, you're in the best position. What is, do you call what the match is? Or
one for ten.
One for ten.
On soft dollar.
Scott?
I totally agree that if the match becomes a 1-to-4, it's going to eliminate the vast majority of the people that you, what you're going to do is you're going to make only well-funded organizations eligible to participate because they're the only ones that are going to have any money. Now, if the match stayed at 1-to-10, but the match had to be a hard match on 1-to-10, you know, that might be something that would require an organization to actually participate more, but wouldn't preclude them from participating at all. So, I mean, that...
Is that a you're suggesting a friendly amendment to David's motion, or...?
I'm looking for council response to that.
David, I think that's you.
No, I think other people, I mean, if I'm completely out here alone, I don't want to pursue it. I just want to make the point. I think it's really important that we train groups to not do what they've done in the past, but learn how to be more effective at raising private dollars and asking for private dollars. Because I've worked with a lot of small groups, and they have great passion, they have great potential, and they have people sitting in the room often who could write a check for $1,000 or $2,000, and they ask them for $15 and think that that's good enough. They don't push themselves. We need to train people to push themselves in some way so that over time we're building a culture of more support from the private sector. And Derek, I'm just looking for a way to do that.
Actually, Scott's words kind of were taken out of my own mouth. I mean, I think that's a way. That's a compromise. I mean, make it a hard amount. I'm concerned about the state of financial affairs and an awful lot of folks' situations right now. And I think that that gets us a little bit closer to where you were. I think Scott's on.
Rick,
I think having a hired match is important. It's more logical. It's more real in terms of the viability of the program in the long run. I think having a little more into the system, I think that a lot of work with the small groups can do with restoration and enhancement. I'm concerned that there is, if the small grants program does turn into more acquisition programs rather than restoration or enhancement. Then I think there does need to be a little more match in there than 1-to-10.
Wayne?
I've been involved in a number of these small organizations probably over my lifetime, and I know that there's a lot more things going on than just Habitat. They provide educational opportunities for, like, archery in school program. They run archery programs, or educational programs. They got Habitat programs. They do community stuff, and so... I know, like, that person is the one I was mostly associated with, so your association has given millions and millions of dollars to the state of Minnesota's Habitat projects with no matching in the past. So in order for these organizations to continue to do what they do, they can't, I don't think they should be burdened with a large amount of money. They're already probably the caretakers, going to be the caretakers in the areas to do these. So I have no problem with a hard match of 10% cut. I would really hate to see us go beyond that until we have gone through this thing a couple more cycles.
Scott?
Could I
offer? You can offer. I will accept your friendly
amendment. I have a friendly amendment to make the match in the conservation, keep it at 1-to-10, but the $1 becomes a hard dollar match.
Okay, so, Bill, got that?
Yes. The motion on the table, it's a friendly amendment. The motion on the table is to insert in the appropriation language for the conservation partners appropriation a requirement for a 1-to-10 hard match, and I would beg that the author convert that to a 10% hard match, because 1-to-10 is 9.5 or 9.9 or something.
We're all over it.
think of mathematics lesson. Further discussion on the motion now, as presented. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion is adopted. Other discussion on either changes or notes and how we might include in our appropriations bill direction for a particular appropriation. Ryan.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a couple questions of Mr. Lyons from Bowser about project number five?
Sure. Kevin, do you mind? So, members, this is the first project listed. It's the one that project number five.
Good morning, Mr. Lyons, Chair, Council, Kevin Lyons, Conservation Easement Manager for the Board of Water and Shore Resources.
I don't think I'm there's a number of notes on the project, but my one of my key questions as I was reviewing it, one of the things that you had mentioned in your presentation is that there's usually about a 2-to-1 ratio of grasslands to wetlands in these RIM projects long term. And I've gotten a lot of pressure from some outside groups about easements in particular. And I personally think easements are a pretty valuable part of our conservation mix. However, there are some current concerns about wetland reserve in that it largely is funding wetland protection on lands, turning them into bathtubs. If there's not enough grasslands involved in those complexes in the wetland reserve program to make them viable habitat improvements for other than retaining water. Grassland nesting species, pheasants, ducks. Can you provide a little bit more information about the grassland complex relation in wetland reserve? And is there any opportunities for us with the RIM easements to specify that we get a little better grassland habitat connected to that?
Mr. Chair, Council members, well, I think the specifics to your question are that the RIM-WRP partnership is a private lands voluntary program. Landowners have to be interested in enrolling in the program. So we're dealing with that with the process. So, each site that's applied for is evaluated from its wetland, function and values that can be restored on the property and the adjacent uplands and native grasslands. Now, we use our science-based evaluation GIS model to determine and locate these sites that are the highest wildlife habitat areas. So it's all part of that process, evaluating that. But it is I don't want to say negotiation, but you are working with that individual landowner. They can't enroll more land that they don't have, and or you're also limited to the land that they are interested in enrolling. So you're trying to weigh those factors, and our score sheet does draw attention to those sites that have a greater ratio of wetlands restored to grassland acres. So the higher ratio is given higher points. So that's the actuality in that evaluation and scoring piece. As far as speaking to the value of these projects, I mean, for those, we are the premier private lands wetland restoration program in the nation. And I would attest that our restorations are as highest quality that we know how to deliver today. And I would challenge that on whether it's DNR lands and or Fish and Wildlife Service lands. Our restorations are as highest quality that we know what to do with balancing common sense into that factor. You can restore native plant communities and have a grassland that's ideally suited for nesting grasslands of certain species, but, where do you draw that line? So we're balancing those national as well as state programs. Specifically to the WRP program, their program allows for every acre of wetland restored, 8 acres of upland to be eligible. But historically, their ratio is in that 2-to-3 range with that. The RIM program has had a historical maximum of a 4-to-1 ratio established by statute. In 2009, the legislature changed that and revised that and allowed us to also now look at a greater ratio of 8-to-1. So there's ways I think we could use our existing scoring and ranking sheet and look at funding, for example, higher larger projects that have a greater ratio. There's ways of doing that, but the basis right now is our evaluation and score sheet. It evaluates not only the wetland functions and values and rates them, but it's also rating those that are wildlife habitat related as well. So, but we have not sorted by size per se at the moment.
David, did you have a follow-up on that?
Just a follow-up comment. My biggest concern is that we're not creating habitat sinks. In that, if you read the Duck Plan, which is one of our guiding documents, you know, there is specifically concern there about one of the indicator species they use is mellitus reproduction. And grassland complexes associated with wetlands that are too small create habitat sinks. I mean, predation rates are too high in those areas. And long term, that doesn't get us to our goals that we want to try to reach with some of these statewide plans. So that's my only comment. And I'm sure your scoring system helped address that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, council members, of course, the DNR's long-range duck plan identifies that 2 million acres of needed habitat. 600,000 acres of that is wetlands restored, that are in addition to what's presently on the landscape. In addition, 1.4 million acres of new grasslands. That's in addition to what's presently in place. That plan also addresses that 60% of that will occur on private lands. That is the primary source of this activity, where this activity is going to occur on. And the RIM-WRP program is focused entirely on that activity and outcome. So, you know, we evaluate and score and rank projects based on proximity to existing public investments, both public and easement, permanently protected lands. So we're trying to evaluate all those factors that the waterfall experts, scientists, believe are the most critical factors. So, you know, we feel very confident we are doing the best that we can.
David, on this topic?
Different topic, but related.
Okay.
You put in a request for funding over 3 years. What happens if we give you funding just for fiscal year 11 and no funding for other years, allowing us to allocate some of the money that you're not going to spend until 12 or 13 to other projects that can go into the ground right away?
Mr. Lyons?
Mr. Chair, council members, we were within our request, I was requesting what I believe was the potential for the RIM-WRP and the RIM funds needed for 3 years of funding through WRP. The federal WRP program is annually funded through the 2008 Farm Bill. These are funds that we know will be coming to Minnesota, and we need to identify state funds. Certainly this is one source, but we also, of course, as I spoke to you last week, we have a significant bonding request as well. We are going to be looking for $36 million per year for the next 3 years for RIM funding to be able to leverage the $50 million WRP dollars that are available, that we believe will be available for Minnesota. So, I mean, it's essentially a $1 to 1.4 federal match. Whatever we don't get, we won't do. We'll certainly use every dollar that we can receive in allocation.
Your request would only give you the ability to draw $5.15 million in 2011 and no more, because that's the way you've asked for it, so that's what our language would be. You've asked for that in 11 and 9.8 in 12 and 2.9 in 13. You're not going to be able to spend 13's dollars until 13.
Bill?
If members would turn to first page of the main request for item number 5, they requested actually, David, $18 million per fiscal year, 11, 12, 13, and 14. And then of the $18 million that they would begin working with in fiscal year 2011, that's the amount that goes into the evaluation and selection of projects. They would, and this is on page 15, they would spend 5.150 in the first fiscal year, but they have committed the entire $18 million amount in the state system.
and they would need that commitment to be able to spend the $5.150 million. They need the $18 million commitment to generate the $5 million expenditure in the first fiscal year. Is that correct, Mr. Lyons?
Mr. Chair, council members, I believe that's correct. I don't have my proposal right in front of me at the moment. Essentially, our request is the $18 million will leverage $25 million. That will allow us to enroll 120 conservation easements and protect and restore 12,000 acres across the prairie section, the forest prairie transition area, and the western metro urbanizing area. That is a one-year request that will leverage $25 million. We'll have a sign-up this winter. We'll select and rank projects, which will obligate all of that $18 million and the $25 million federal funds in 2011. We would be back, I intend to be back, in 2012 for a similar request.
And so if the number on page 1 under 2011 were $6 million, the number on page 15 under fiscal year 2011 would be a third of the $5.15 million.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, it's possible I was confused on what you were looking for there, what the years in 11, 12, 13 illustrates of when we intend to obligate the 18 or whatever request that we receive from the council or legislature, how we would obligate those funds in what year on the process of conducting an application, sign up, selecting and ranking projects, going out and doing the field work. This is a 3-year activity to complete this work from start to finish.
But Mr. Lyons, just to clarify, I read that allocation is really a capacity issue. You were just sequencing out the $18 million over those 3 years based on what you think is realistically accomplishable in each of the 3 years. So you still could accomplish $5.1 million worth of project work in year one if you were given $5.1 million worth of work. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, council members, we will obligate the funds that we are appropriated in the to ensure that we leverage the federal funds. The actual timing of that work will be accomplished over a 3-year period. FOPA serving all the field work associated, engineering design. Those activities over this larger scale of project take a 3-year window to complete. So we are demonstrating, or my budget table there illustrates how we'll be spending the whatever funds we were appropriated in 11, how we would intend to use those funds in those 3 years, because we have 3 years to complete the project.
Rick, be to follow up on the timing question. If you were, let's say, everything worked right, and we make our recommendations here, and the legislature comes in, and we pass this in the first week of the session.
I'm with you.
So wouldn't you be able to be out there in the spring and be working on projects for the spring?
Mr. Lawrence. Mr. Chair, Councilmember Representative Hansen. We intend to conduct a sign-up in the winter of 2010 to get that pool of applicants, and we will rank and score them, and we should have that by March. We're expecting by March 1st to have that potential list of projects, so then when we determine how much funds we have available to put into the partnership, then we will obligate those state funds along with the 1.4 leveraging of federal dollars to that for those projects, and we would then begin that process of 3 years from start to finish to complete the projects.
Wayne,
since you're working on a ranking system,
correct,
it would be fair to assume that the first ones are your highest priority and your lowest ones are the lowest priority. So with $18 million you're getting, if you'd gotten full funding, we would have some projects which would be acceptable but less desirable. And based on the system we're using, the allocation now getting about a third, we can just about guarantee that with fewer dollars, we continue to get higher quality projects. Can I assume that, or am I off base?
Mr. Lyons?
Mr. Chair, council members, Mr. Enger, We do use a scoring and ranking sheet, trying to evaluate every project against each other, and we select the highest ranking projects. So for example, what we did in 2009, where those funds that we received from the Lessard Sams, for those funds we received from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, that was recommended by the Lessard Sams Council, we selected the highest projects for funding out of for those funds, and it's, you know, I'm going on memory. The highest ranking project scored a 93, and we scored down to a 68 in that pool. Well, excuse me, that was our total package of both bonding and Lessard Sams. We selected the highest projects for the Lessard Sams from the 93 down to some number in the high 70s. I don't remember that list off the top of my head, but we funded those because they were based that we believe were the highest value projects for the state. So we use the Lessard Sams fund for that. Because a project scores below that does not mean it's not as a good project. It's simply not ranked as high as the others. So we believe there's an extremely large pool of landowners out there that we can select from. I mean, we've had more than double, if not triple, applications for funds that we've had over the course of the last 2 years, and we've spent $41 million and $43 million in the last two fiscal years with this partnership. So we have a very large demand and potential from landowners. I'm not concerned at all that we cannot get high-quality priority projects.
Any further discussion on this allocation?
The only other thing was in our communications to the Senate, the House, and the Governor, I would strongly recommend that we encourage that bonding dollars also be used for wind reserve. That our allocation represents an acceleration, not that we're Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Commission is going to be funding wind reserve in perpetuity.
Thank you. Anything else?
Sure. Just I mentioned before, I think that this is a, although it's one of the largest amounts, if not the largest recommendation in the motion, it still is lower than what we provided last year. I think we are missing an opportunity by doing this. I think it would be good if staff could provide us in the motion that we have how much is among these projects dedicated to wetlands, prairies, forests, and fish game and wildlife habitat, as well as the regional section area breakdown before we go to that.
So I think, so the direction of, I think we heard the direction of, I guess the question is, since the sign-up hasn't started, I'm not sure they can give you the geographic breakdown.
Rick, I was talking about, I believe, with this particular one, we're relatively low. But I'm asking staff to do this not on this particular project, but overall the motion that we have to give the motion that's on the floor to adopt these recommendations before we vote on that, to look at the breakdown on the constitutional language of wetlands, prairies, forests, fish game and wildlife habitat, and the regional section area. So I'm just referencing that this particular project, I think we could do more, but I'd like to sort of go, because I think we're moving towards conclusion here, that we look at those breakdowns.
Bill, as I understand what Councillor Hansen wants, is for staff to break down these new numbers with regard to how they will be spread among prairies, wetlands, forests, restore protected lands, and probably the sections as well. I cannot commit to do that because it requires the completion of an accomplishment plan. Do it today. We can have that information for the executive committee on January 4th and are scheduled to do that, as well as have that information for the council on January the 7th.
Wes?
Mr. Chair, Kevin, it appears that we've already done that breakdown quite thoroughly in the proposal, and if you are receiving roughly one-third of the requested funds, Kevin, would this basically
account for one-third of the projected breakdowns in various forests and wetlands?
Mr. Chair, council members, Mr. Bench, that would be correct.
Any further discussion on this project? Okay. We do have a motion on the table, members, to adopt the spreadsheet with the changes we've made and the inclusion of the specific language changes that will be incorporated in a rider's law. Do we have any further discussion on the initial motion?
Sorry. David. I'd like to talk about the Green Corridor Legacy Program number 9.
Okay.
You notice I wasn't alone in saying that we should not be funding the seed nursery portion of that program. And I would make a motion that our money not be used for the seed nursery portion of the program.
The motion that before the council is to direct the funds away from the seed nursery propagation facility.
Discussion on that motion. Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion adopted.
I'd like to just also bring up on 34, there were a couple of comments, one that I did not make, I point out, about not doing roadside. And I'd love to hear from those that made the comment about why they weren't interested in roadside.
Scott?
I'm the one that made that comment. And the reason that I would like to see the roadsides for wildlife program and that proposal eliminated is the fact that they continue to think that I-90 corridors or I-35 corridors for demonstration prairie purposes is the best use or the best way to achieve game, fish, and wildlife habitat. And I posed the question to Mr. Simons, said, can you ensure us that those roadsides for wildlife will be directed to state and county roads where we can actually raise wildlife that can survive? And he indicated that he could not guarantee that. And so I guess I don't think that trying to raise game, fish, and wildlife in an interstate median is the best use of game, fish, and wildlife funds. And that's, they couldn't promise that it would be used where game could actually propagate and survive, and that's why I wanted
to
remove.
Why don't you make a motion?
I make a motion to remove the roadsides for wildlife from that program.
Spreading the wealth around. Right? All right, so we have a motion on the table. Bill, can you cast that? Raise that motion.
Scott Rawl moves to remove the roadside funding from the appropriation recommendation for number 34, accelerated prairie grassland and restoration, etc.
Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion adopted. David,
can I go again? Both the Project 23 and 7, which are in our list, are essentially great projects. I would like to make a motion that both of those be subject to a two-for-one match. I think it's important that we not be the only funds in there, and I think it's important for Washington County specifically that they put money to play in from their bond issues, and I'd like to treat them as a part,
soft, and
hard balance.
Okay, cool.
Commissioner Hartwell moves to, or Councilor Hartwell moves to direct projects number 23 and number 27 to a 2-to-1 hard match. Commission for staff to figure out how to state that their percent.
Any further
just get a clarification, is that $2 to one local or two local?
Two local to one state.
Very good clarification.
Excuse me, 23 and which?
Discussion on that motion.
23 and 7.
In Washington.
Yeah. 23 and 7. Ellen.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wonder if we should hear from them very briefly.
Yes, then. Are there representatives from either Washington or Dakota County that can speak to this motion? Ms. Harper, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the council.
I understood it correctly, Mr. Hartwell is requesting $2 of local dollars to $1 of state dollars. Is that correct? If we were to, it would be a little challenging to get a 2-for-1 without using some of the in-kind and the landowner donation. The landowner donation portion was a significant part of our match because it signifies their direct involvement and whether we end up spending those dollars outright for our portion of the funding versus reducing the cost of the easement by their appropriate amount, I think is an important consideration.
Ms. Harper, on that question, any thoughts about a 2-to-1 hard match requirement?
Could I ask a clarification? Would the $2 at the local level be for any source? Or are you specifically saying it has to have P County Motherhood?
I think it's an any source.
Then I would, I guess, echo what Mr. Singer said regarding landowner donation being an appropriate contribution at the local level.
Ellen?
Mr. Chair, let me ask David, would you be, I don't know if that, I assume that would not be considered a hard match. Would you be open to including it? Part of the match?
I'm open to including it. This is the same thing I was trying to get to on the conservation part. Is that we need to build an expectation that people are going to put in hard dollars and not depend just on us for the next 24 years. Let me amend my motion to say a 1-for-1 hard match is required.
So the motion has been amended to require a 1-to-1 hard match for both projects 23 and 7. Further discussion on this motion? Scott? No. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Here.
Follow up on that, and I'd like to see if I realize that Matt is not here, but the Prairie Heritage Fund, if there would be a 1-to-1 hard or soft match available for those acquisitions. If we're requiring a match for some acquisitions and not others, is it appropriate to require matching for another acquisition?
Is that in the form of a motion, Rick, or just a discussion item?
I was seeking if it was somebody here from the Prairie Heritage Fund, and I guess if there's the Northern Tallgrass Prairie acquisition, Green Corridor Legacy acquisition, any of the acquisitions that we did not just put a match on, if there are acquisitions, if there is a match requirement possible. Any of the project managers.
So the request is if any of those project managers that are acquiring parcels, Green Corridors, the DNRs, WMA acquisitions, and we know that Matt is not here on behalf of Pheasants Forever, but those that are here, they could speak to that question. Not seeing anyone coming up. Here we go.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair and members.
If you could state your name.
Joe Pavelko. I'm the Minnesota Director of Conservation for Pheasants Forever. This is about my 12th day on the job. I will make a call to Matt again to run out to California yesterday unexpectedly, but he said he'll be able to answer calls, so I will make a call and get back to you.
Okay. Yes, please.
Mr. Chair, member of the council, members of the council, I'm Bill Peng, that program leader with the DNR. I cannot specifically indicate that we could manage a 1-to-1. That would be a decision that would much so be made by our commissioner's office, so I'm going to have to hedge on a little bit at this time. We typically use a number of sources of funding. And try to match things up as best we can, leverage as much as we can. But I'm not an guy for a while, and so I can't tell you what amount of leveraging we're doing right now.
Mr. Duvall.
And Mr. Chair and Council Members, Mike Duvall with DNR Fisheries. And within the AMA acquisition portion of this, I would respond similarly to Mr. Penny's. Just again, the types of leveraging and things that we do within our program, including considerable landowner donation value and other things, that are part of our overall funding proposal. So we have to reflect and bring this back to our commissioner's office to respond on the level of match, whether we could achieve that.
Thank you. Mr. Cobbs.
Just about said good morning, but it is good afternoon. My name is Brad Cobb. I'm the program manager for the Green Corridor Project. We would not be able to commit a one-to-one hard match. We did indicate in our proposal what our leveraging dollar amounts are or currently would be. We are actively working with local conservation groups, and I think once we get an appropriation, if we get an appropriation, I should say, that we will aggressively seek additional dollars to support our leveraging proposal.
Thank you. Scott.
Well, I have a comment not directed to Mr. Cobb. Does anybody want to?
Okay, before we do, Mr. Schneider, I believe, would also like to provide a comment on the map.
Mr. Chairman, Council Members, John Schneider from Ducks Unlimited. As you recall, approximately $2.5 million were requested for land acquisition to allow the restoration to build the wetland. Ducks Unlimited does not have a capital account for land acquisition. That component of our proposal was to allow a restoration to happen. The land is for sale at fair market price, we assume. We don't have the ability to put funds into the land acquisition component of our proposal, and it's really a complementary component to making that restoration possible with the remaining lands in the basin being intended for RIM WRP. So that would severely hamper our ability to go out now and in the future target lands that are for sale that are key to restoring wetlands. But they're not available for bargain sale. The landowners aren't necessarily looking to restore the wetland. They're looking to sell the land, and we're looking to restore the wetland.
Thank you. Scott.
Well, I'm not speaking on behalf of Pheasants Forever or for Matt Holland, but I can give you a very precise understanding of what would happen if your NGOs are required to come up with a hard one-to-one match. Right now, when Pheasants Forever acquires a piece of property, and we're doing that in Nobles County, the property was valued at $192,000. Okay, Pheasants Forever bought it. They're turning that over to the state, and for that, they will receive a RIM check, okay, a reinvested Minnesota check, equal to half of the value of that property, which they then go use in their next acquisition. Okay, so in theory, right now, if they go forward with an acquisition, they're putting up half the dollars of that acquisition, and the other half is a ring match. And so if you turn around and take NGOs and subject them to a one-to-one match, you are not going to accelerate the pace of game, fish, and wildlife habitat beyond what that organization's ability to do that work is now. And so, I mean, one of the reasons that I don't think that we're looking at a little bit of different apples and oranges is the fact that some of our NGO counterparts they operate very mean, they're lean, they're quick. You know, they get work done at a pace much faster. I mean, the acquisition that's closing in Nobles County this week, from landowner indication to sell to close was 40 days. Okay, I challenge any other organization, okay, to operate that quick and that efficiently. And so I know that one-to-one match at NGOs will absolutely keep their speed at exactly what it is now, because right now they're operating on that. They buy it, they get a RIM match for half, they're matching $1 for $1. And so I think we're looking at a little bit different I mean, I understand Rick Ciesel's as the same. I see them as very different.
Derek.
Just a quick comment. I really get really nervous when I hear us kind of, it sounds like we're moving in the general direction of a one-size-fits-all. And I really agree with Scott and others. Each entity has some opportunities, and I don't know that we want to force people into a situation where one size is going to fit all. We need some flexibility.
I'd like to hear from the Conservancy. They're a project here.
Is there someone here from the Nature Conservancy who can speak to the project number 17?
My name is Steve Chaplin. I'm a senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy.
Good afternoon. Did you hear the question?
No, please repeat it.
Rick.
Would there be any ability for the Conservancy providing a one-to-one match on acquisition, on the acquisition component in your proposal?
It would be, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, it would be a stretch for, like most of the other conservation organizations, we would, in essence, have to go out and raise that additional funding before we could get started on the project. It would affect how rapidly we can move forward on a lot of the projects. And, you know, that's one of the things that we hope to be able to accomplish in these large-scale prairie landscape restorations is to be able to move quickly and take advantage of opportunities as they come up.
Rick, Paul, would you be able to show a soft match, such as landowners?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I think that a soft match would help things, and there undoubtedly will be some examples of that as we talk to landowners in our outreach program. But I don't necessarily think we could do that in every case.
If you'll notice on my comments, I think that there does need to be a match on some of these projects. I think I know where David is coming from, and I share the concern with Washington County not putting up some of the money after the voters have approved it. However, I think with the motions that we've taken, we are saying that if a project is in the metro area and the property taxpayers have approved a tax increase, that we will require that match to come there. We are not making that same requirement or even transparency to document the match. Contingent that there be a match with the other acquisition projects, which goes back to part of my concern here, is that the motion before us has a lot of acquisition. We are taking two projects and saying we need to have match on them. We are lighter on restoration than what I think is needed during these times, difficult economic times. So when there's acquisition and if there's landowner donation, I think that's important to have, whether it's an NGO or the agencies, to show them if we're going to require for some projects.
Wayne.
Is there are we just still in the discussion? Was there a motion?
We have an initial motion on the table, which is to adopt the spreadsheet with the changes that we've made. Thank you, Mr. Chapman.
But there wasn't concern on the vehicle.
There was no motion. Back to the original motion. Is there further discussion on the motion? David?
I would just notice that we had a lot of conversation about funding docks in Dakota County. Is that something we're interested in?
And remember, just if you were planning to make a motion, I guess the plan going forward was anything that was not made explicit today but was indicated in the notes, staff would work to develop a draft that would reflect as best we could see a consensus of what members were saying. Because there are some things that we haven't got to, but I see either very common themes or fairly innocuous. But
just to let you know that if it is not explicitly addressed in a motion today, that doesn't mean that staff won't try to incorporate those, or that staff will incorporate those in the appropriations bill that's going to be before you in June.
Mr. Chair?
Bill.
We'll follow up on that with our judge.
So David?
So I would make a motion to exclude DOC funding from that, from Project 23.
Councilor Hartwell makes a motion to makes an amendment to the motion on the table to prohibit DOC funding in Project 23.
Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Helen.
I kept telling myself don't get into this debate, but I can't help myself. I just want to remind you that people who can't afford votes want to fish too. Just want to, that's all I'm
going to
say.
Right. I think DOCS is a little incorrect. I think it's more of a peer system.
Peers.
Which, so I think, given the level of funding we're recommending compared to the original request, I would guess that Dakota County will probably drop that off in their ultimate project. But I certainly understand your concerns. With fishing piers, they absolutely do improve shoreline protection. I mean, it gives people access to waterfront without, you know, treading over all the native species that may be planted there. So that's all I have to say.
Wait.
My concern would be so with David's is once we start with the docks, then do we start boat ramps? Because do we start with our piers? Do we start with boat ramps then too? Because then we don't have people docking their boats wherever they want and have to do with certain locations. And so I could see this just getting into a realm of projects we maybe don't want to start with.
Other comments, discussion? We have the motion before us. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Okay, again, back to the original motion on the table. Is there further discussion? David?
I just want to say I think if somebody has something in the notes that you want to have included, we ought to deal with it today and not put it off until the 7th. Let's go through it so staff doesn't have to interpret one person's note and try to craft some language about that. I think when we leave here today, we'd be much better off if we covered anything that's in these notes and said yes or no, rather than leaving it to staff to interpret that.
And members, on that very point, I'd like to call your attention to the Cass County project, which is project number 22. It's the fourth one listed on the back side. If you look at my notes, there were three of the, I believe, six parcels that were identified were parcels that, if acquired by the county, they would gain access to landlocked public county-administered tax-forfeited forest lands behind that. So by acquiring a 40 or an 80, you're gaining access, management potential, recreational opportunity to, in some cases, hundreds of additional acres that otherwise is not available legally. So I would, as chair, make a motion to put priority on acquisition of those three parcels that are would gain access to the landlocked public lands managed by Cass County Land Department. Discussion on that motion.
Mr. Chair, weren't those the top priorities on their prioritization?
They were three of the six. I'm not sure if they listed them in rank order, but they didn't list 1, 2, 3. I think it was 1, 2, and 5. Further discussion on that motion? Rick?
I would move to amend by adding the requirement for a 25% match.
Okay, so we have a motion to amend the initial motion. Bill, you think you've done all that?
The motion before the council is to amend the Kilgore motion to require a 25% potlatch match.
And just to clarify, is that a hard match?
It's a hard match.
Discussion on that motion?
Would Scott? Is it possible to handle each of those individually? Because they truly are very different goals of that project. know, I mean, might support one, not the other, but if they're in the same motion, makes it more difficult for members. Could we?
Chair, the sequence is to vote on the amendment.
Right. So we'll vote on Representative Hansen's motion to amend first, and then if that's depending on if that fails or passes, then we'll take up the initial motion I had.
Greg? Mr. Chairman, I think you might have too many motions here. You can't have a motion to amend an amendment to an amendment. And so what I think you need to do is dispose of your motion first. And then deal with
Now that you can amend your motion. So we're three layers deep?
You're three layers deep, and you can only be two.
Because you're amending this whole thing.
Yes.
When you're online, it's
that, thank you for that clarity. Okay, so.
The motion before us is the Kildare motion to provide priority and program request title 22 for acquisition providing access to publicly owned land.
Further discussion on that motion? Rick?
Is someone here from the project manager for that?
Someone here from the Cass County or? I don't see Joshua here.
Rick? Mr. Chair, was there a, on those three parcels, you talked about those providing access, but do they protect high priority scientific reason? Is there an endangered, threatened, or natural species of concern on those tracts that would justify the funding?
Rick, I can't speak to that, but I do know that from the testimony that Mr. Stevenson provided to us last week, that that would give them the ability to manage those forest systems that they otherwise can't. They simply cannot gain access to manage that forest.
Our section of priorities specifically stated to target acquisitions that allowed access to other properties. Right. So, I mean, it certainly meets the both, I think, the statewide and the section goals for that.
For that area. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion adopted. Rick?
I move to require for that project a 25% match from Potlatch, either sought or adopted.
Discussion on that motion? Third.
You know, Rick, when that, when we were before us, that was an issue that I raised, and it seemed pretty clear that Potlatch was in the mood to do that. I'm just wondering, could you lower that 25% and try to get something out of it, as opposed to just jeopardizing the project?
I think when you look at a variety of projects that are in front of us, so we're requiring a one-to-one match. This particular project is named Protector Acquire Key Industrial Forest Land Tracts in central Minnesota. So the private sector that this is being done in conjunction with, I think 25% is not too much to ask for. And I will maybe go 20%, but I think there has to be some significant contribution if elsewhere among the motion that we have here, we're going to be dealing with one-to-one requirements from both.
So are you willing to drop the 25 to 20, or?
I'm willing to drop it to 20, if that's
what. So the motion is to require a 20% hard or soft match, but pop activities. Right?
Mr. Chair, unlike other projects, so you're asking the original land owner to be the one that's making that contribution, where in our other efforts, it's been the land purchasers that we've been requiring to come up with match. I mean, Potlatch is the current owner of the property. So we're asking for them to give us a 25% discount. Have we done that with UPM on their projects? Any of the other major landowners that we've got projects with? I mean, that would be what I would compare the precedent to.
On that point, Ryan, I do believe, and I may be incorrect, but I do believe that on the Upper Mississippi Forest Legacy Project, there was a fairly substantial in-kind contribution by the company on the value of the easement.
Okay.
Further discussion on the motion. And again, to clarify, the motion is to require a 20% hard or soft match by the owner of those parcels of land in Cass County. There is no further discussion. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is not adopted. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Wayne?
On number five, I had a comment in there that adjacent to public land only. At that particular time, under the assumption that maybe the $18 million would have been approved, I was looking for basically only to use a WRP rim adjacent to existing public lands in order to maximize the benefits. Since then, I don't have a concern about we've got
them
on board.
Rick?
Since we're unwilling to require match, I move to delete the one-to-one requirement for Washington.
Discussion on that motion, Helen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to make a comment that as we've gone on today, I've gotten increasingly uncomfortable with this whole discussion for a couple reasons. And it speaks to this motion sort of sideways. But I agree with David that it's a good idea to instill an expectation of a match and of trying to raise money and of contributing and participating. That's a good thing. But I'm very uncomfortable with how we're doing it here at the last minute without any prior notice. And we're doing it quite inconsistently for a variety of good reasons in some cases. But it seems to me that if we're going to require significant matches, we should say so up front, or we should do that in our RFP, or we should say that when we have our hearings and ask them all the same question. What is, you know, how, give them the challenge. I'm getting very uncomfortable with what looks fairly arbitrary right now, too, as Rick has pointed out. And the way that we've sort of put this together today strikes me as unfair. So I'm going to support the motion, even though I think I really strongly believe that we need to have Dakota and Washington County pony up significant dollars to live up to their commitment to the voters. But I'm very uncomfortable with what we've done up till now today.
Could I ask Washington and Dakota counties to come up to the table for just a second on that point? So the question I have is, absent a requirement for a one-to-one match, could you give us a sense of what the counties would be able to contribute either in kind or as a hard match, hard contribution to these outdoor heritage dollars?
Chair, council members, as we stated in our proposal, we do anticipate to do a one-to-one match, but in our definition of what that match would include, it would include landowner donation, because we are pressing hard on the landowners for a conservation easement, where they're going to continue to own the property and use it and live on it, that we feel they should be willing to make some of that contribution. So I believe whether you require it or not, that's our goal, is to try to match those projects to community, but not in a hard, not 100% hard match.
Thank you, Ms. Hartley. Mr. Singer?
Mr. Chair, I really support having the local units of government commit dollars to doing this. I think there would be a too easy tendency to just say that this council or the legislature or the state funds or the federal funds should be wholly available for this. In Dakota County, we have strived to make sure that whatever local unit of government, whether it's a city or a township or the watershed district or, in our case, the county, commits significant dollars, and I don't see that we're going to change that position. One thing that would be difficult is if the one-to-one match were on every single project, or if it was balanced between the overall appropriation, because there's going to be different opportunities and challenges amongst all of the different projects that we have. And I, too, would urge this council to be as consistent as possible to make sure that, you know, this standard is applied consistently across the board, as opposed to just singling out entities that have taken a step forward to commit local dollars when, in many cases, other entities have chosen not to do that. And so in one way, that's almost penalizing those entities that have taken the leadership and have brought some of these dollars forward. And I don't think you want to send signals. Conversely, I think it would be in the interest of conservation to make sure that if you had a formula, as Senator Anderson is suggesting, that everybody is aware of, that you have plans, that you have locally committed match dollars, and that makes you eligible for some of these state dollars. So I would urge the council to be a little flexible as we move forward with this, but to advance this principle that there should be local buy-in with contribution for conservation.
And just to clarify, my understanding of your response is that absent a requirement, you would still, we would still see at least a one-to-one match of parts. Hard and, I gather, soft dollars.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, excuse
Chair
me.
Chair Council, before you kind of finish up the discussion and your action on it, I would like clarification as to whether the one-to-one match is project by project within the proposal, or, as Al said, whether it's across, whether it's proposal-wide, because, like you said, each project is a little bit different, and you might actually be able to get more match on one parcel than
Mr. Chair, I would have interpreted it to be across the entire program.
Thank you.
Wayne.
A number of these projects were spelled out in the beginning when we first looked at them, that said that leverage or match money was available, and that was a priority on how they got ranked. And so therefore, to completely exclude the fact now that a one-to-one, when they said in the proposal maybe that that was available, would be unfair as well, because without the one-to-one, they may not even have gotten on the radar.
And I guess, just to clarify, I don't think the intent is to change that at all. It's simply, it would be to follow the intent of their proposal through the work program. And mm-hmm. So that would all have to be specified in greater detail at the next stage, if we get to the next stage. Further to Rick.
I think just there are, throughout all of the proposals that we had, there are a variety of people simply could put some up. I think the difference here is we're requiring it for two. And so I think it's not right to require it for two. It's only. And therefore, we've had an agreement on the record that they have to put money up. If we don't do that, we can hold that to that. But I think we should remove the requirement in order to make that.
I would lean towards agreeing with you, Rick. I think what reflected my vote earlier in supporting it wasn't so much Dakota County, because Dakota County has been using their bonding authority from their referendum. I think there's a real concern from our previous meeting that Washington County hasn't utilized their bonding authority, and I think that was part of what the message was, is that we'd really like to see you utilize that source of funding that your voters authorized through that referendum. That being said, I'm going to vote yes on Rick's motion.
David?
So, since I created this firestorm, let me just admit, first of all, that I was being punitive to Washington County, because I think they have been disrespectful to the voters by not allocating money out of the $20 million bond referendum passed by the voters, whether it was advisory or not. And I added Dakota County to this because I felt we should treat all metro counties the same. So I will support your motion. But understand, if you come back and you haven't spent hard dollars, you won't see a vote from me again.
Further discussion on the motion. Rick.
Council's reminding me I need to move to reconsider would be the proper way to vote. And then vote on, then I take my vote.
Greg,
this is Chairman Rick. I think the best way, especially if David is willing to remove it, would be to
to vote to reconsider, then Mr. Lucky just
withdraw
his motion.
So the motion is to reconsider the previous motions regarding the one-to-one match for the Dakota and Washington County projects.
So you have to be on the affirmative side, the winning side,
to make that motion? No, Mr. Chairman, only the person who voted on the prevailing side generally makes the motion, but we don't, it was a voice vote, so we don't know.
Or do you want me to just?
You can make that motion.
I'll make that motion.
Motion to reconsider.
Farwell moves to reconsider his motion passed to require one-to-one hard match for projects 23 and 27.
Discussion on that.
23 and 27.
No further discussion being heard. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Motion reconsidered. Now, David, the floor is yours.
I now need to withdraw my motion.
Yes, that's right.
I will withdraw my motion.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Rick, thanks for the explanation. Rick.
I have a broader question. So we have reduced the amounts that we're asked for on a variety of projects. And some of those projects have staff requests that are in there. Some projects had a mix of restoration and acquisition. And with the project manager on the front end, this is, if we're going to approve today, I'm a little concerned that, let's say a hypothetical project asks for $10 million, and we get $5 million, and the project manager says, well, we need all the same staff. I'm not supportive of funding that. I think there should be some, if we reduce these amounts, what does that reduction get us? I personally would like to see that if there's a fraction of these that are restoration, that we don't lose the restoration portion of it, and that we have the hiring defined as to what or who or how many would be hired if we approve at these levels.
So I'm going to turn it over to Bill, but just recall, members, last year, every proposal that we recommended for funding was funding. We're in that boat where the amount asked for was less than what was actually received, so they had to make a difference. Bill?
On January 7th, you'll have for you the draft accomplishment plan for each of these, and that will show the personnel, and that will be the time to make a motion with regard to limiting personnel.
Still have an original motion on the table. Is there any further discussion, Rick?
I would move to give guidance to the project managers where there is a combination of acquisition and restoration to maximize the amount of restoration that would be in their revised restoration.
So does everyone understand that motion? So priority given to restoration and enhancement. When both those two, as well as protection, are in play. Any further discussion on that motion, David?
I'm just wondering what that really means to someone. What standard do we hold them to if we provide that guidance? What are we doing? I mean, I know where you're headed, but I don't know if I were a project manager and that there was a sentence that said, give a priority to, that I'd know how to interpret that.
It's still somewhat ambiguous to me, so help me out.
I think at a minimum there's a documentation of the restoration component. Again, let's say if 10% was restoration, that doesn't go to zero. What my intent would be is if it's 10% that was restoration in the original one, but there's still 10% there, that's a component. I realize that there's some of these projects that have a different mix. It's there, and that may not be possible if the restoration was going to occur after the acquisition. But I think at a minimum there should be documentation that there's a sense of the council that we want to try to do as much restoration enhancement, which was one of our priorities in that time.
So would you be willing to clarify your motion to indicate what you said in proportion to the amount of work that was proposed in the original proposal?
I think the staff got that motion.
Discussion on that motion.
Wayne?
I'm a little unclear. We're talking about proportions. What happens if, on a particular case, there is no option to be proportionate? Because proportionate now, the restoration is so small that it's you can't get anybody to agree to do it. I'm concerned that when we have something blank like this, we are now going to become the project managers, which I really want to do, and try to make the decisions for them. I think the intent is correct, that somehow we focus towards and make sure we don't lose the restoration aspects, but I don't think I really want to get involved in nitpicking this.
Yes?
I echo your sentiments. Do we want to really micromanage these projects to that point, or do we want to give those project managers the capability to manage themselves under the allocations that we recommend?
David? Jim?
Well, I think the other thing, I think your points are kind of in conflict here, Representative Hansen. At one point, you want to reduce personnel, which restoration is normally personnel heavy, but at the same time, you want to increase or maintain the restoration part. So I think your two points are kind of in conflict here. So I would stay with Wayne's comments. I think we should let the project managers decide how this is allocated.
As I understand it, Mr. Chair, the motion is a sense of the council, and it's Councilor Hansen moves to advise recipients to maintain restoration, enhancement, and protection proportions in draft accomplishment plans. Is that correct?
Correct. And the motion says nothing about staffing. It only relates to the restoration, and I think that it is legitimate. Public policy question to look at the constitutional language of restoration and enhancement, and I believe we should be focusing more on restoration and enhancement. So I don't want in this process for the restoration component, enhancement component to be lost, and that we end up with a solely acquisition.
Is there any further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, this isn't specifically on the motion, but related. I wonder, Bill, if you could help us by the next meeting. Is it possible to have a breakdown on totals of all the projects? I probably won't even be here, but, in terms of how much is restoration, how much is acquisition, how much is enhancement, and then that geographic breakdown, I think that would be really valuable to see that before the next phase.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, we've hired the person who did it for free last time.
Awesome. Yeah. Perfect.
So you will have that information number.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm glad to be able to satisfy a counselor.
Jim?
Well, I think what I was saying is, if we're going to do that, I think we should have a chance then to do a reallocation, because I think a lot of us would allocate our money differently if that proportion is going to change significantly.
Scott?
Inside those projects, they have protection, enhancement, and restoration. I would like to leave it up to the project manager to determine when we make an allocation to the department and it's something less than that, they decide what happens to it down the pike, okay? I would like to allow the proposer, if their dollar amount gets cut, for them to be able to pick the parts of their proposal that are the most biologically diverse or whatever, and allow them to achieve the greatest level of game, fish, and wildlife habitat out of that, not us mandating that just because it started out 75-25 and we cut you 10%, it's got to stay exactly 75-25. Because their priorities in that proposal may change. I think we should leave that up to the project managers to pick and work on the projects that provide the best game, fish, and wildlife habitat.
Okay, and then Wayne or Wes, I know.
I was just a little confused about the motion. Does it say that the proportion will remain the same, or kind of suggested that it's...
To the council, and it says that Hansen moves to advise to maintain restoration, enhancement, protection proportions in their draft accomplishment plans, which they will prepare to allocate the new sum of money that they have been recommended.
So advise, once again, what does advise mean? Does that advise mean you shall,
no.
Or you are, it's recommended that you do, or asked that you do?
David, I would say I actually like the language. What it says is bring us back the plan and don't exclude restoration unless you have a really good reason and you can justify it in the accomplishment plan.
I like that explanation.
And I think that's fair. There will be projects where with half the money you don't get to do what you were hoping to do and you have to make some hard choices. But don't just default to we're not going to think about restoration. And I think that's fair and reasonable.
Further discussion on the motion? Bob?
I can't agree with the fact that we voted on these projects based on what the project manager said he was going to do, whether it's going to buy land, restore, enhance, whatever. And I think that should be the things that we go for. I can see, probably I'm not a person who would like to buy land, and knowing the state is one of the largest landowners in the world, I think I would much rather restore and enhance. But at the same time, I can see many reasons why we should buy land, and that would complete the whole picture of thing the project manager wants to do. So I think we are, in fact, taking care of this discussion point by simply voting what we did the other day.
Thank you. Further discussion? Wes?
Just a little philosophical approach on restoration protection, whether it's acquisition or restoration. Restoration is cyclic. It's going to occur. What we do today is going to require to be done over again and over again. What we acquire is going to be permanent as we can put it. And just because the land hasn't been restored and touched for 5-10 years does not make it bad habitat. It probably makes it good habitat, and it could be better. So restoration, in many cases, it's kind of nebulous. We're going to have to continue that process over and over and over again, and how good is good? It's always going to be a judgment type of factor.
In summation, the motion is to ask.
Hearing no further discussion on the motion. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion is adopted. We still have the original motion on the table that has been amended. Is there any further discussion on that motion? And again, you will see the work plans brought back to you prior to the January 7th meeting that specifies how they plan to spend this money with the allocations that this council has recommended. Bill, anything further?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is on the 7th of January, motions will be in order as well.
That's correct. Just as it was last year. With that, any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, we take up the original motion, which would be to include in the draft appropriations bill that the council will be reviewing on the 7th, the allocations as made today, as well as some of the language that will be incorporated in the riders regarding specific proposals. You need a roll call. I'm requesting a roll call vote on this motion. Hearing no further discussion, let's take the roll call.
Ellen Anderson?
Yes.
Lester Bench?
Let me refrain for just a minute. I've got to think about this.
Ryan Bronson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Wayne Hanger?
Yes.
Bob Gunther?
Yes.
Rick Hansen?
Yes.
David Hartwell?
Yes.
Mike Kilgore?
Yes.
Darby Nelson?
Yes.
Scott Rawl?
Yes.
Yes.
Lester is a yes.
And Mr. Hanson. Is
there an answer? It's seen.
It was seen?
I said pass.
Pass.
So I'll vote yes.
And a report on the vote?
11 yeses.
The vote is 11 yeas, 0 nays. So the motion has been adopted. council members, excellent work. Some of this was very painstaking. I appreciate your indulgence. Jim?
The document we're going to see on the 7th, when will the council be able to first see that?
Phil? It should be drafted, goes to the executive committee, will go to the council prior to the 4th, for the 2nd.
So as the executive council member, committee member, you'll see that on the public session. Our last item of the agenda is in public consultation.
Oh, yeah, let me just follow up on an issue that you talked about last time. When are we going to pick this up on the web?
Mr. Chair, what is this, Mr. Nelson?
A package we just voted on, 11-0.
Mr. Chair, that will be up tomorrow.
Okay, the concern that I have is the one that developed last time around, where people saw what was there, the initial draft, and were all upset, not realizing that the world could change in the final determination. And so I'm wondering if we're going to put it up right now, but since we do have the opportunity to do some voting and some changing on January 7th, to at least have a rider piece that says very clearly, it may be in big font, you know, this may change so that people don't misunderstand what we've got. That was my concern.
Good suggestion, Ben.
Rick?
Just to follow up on that, I voted yes for this because this could change. And I think that the advice and the motion that was adopted on the restoration, if we get that information back, I think that's an important component in that. One other thing that I think we didn't spend a great deal of time on, but we will be getting the February forecast after our activities are done. And I am concerned about that drop in the sales tax. I think we should be a little bit flexible there if we have to provide some cushion, because the economic situation there is not over yet. And I don't want to be appropriating dollars that we don't have or that result in cash flow that makes some very difficult choices in terms of sequencing. So I think we need to think about that and watch as the November and the December receipts, which we should have, the December receipts by the time we meet in mid-January.
I have December 9th.
So we get some idea of trend, but I think we need that 5% question in terms of what that means and what our existing reserve means, what it means for the projects we've already proposed. I think we're right. I just am urging that we look at that one a bit in caution.
Bill?
Councilor Hanson, we can have Mr. Rolox come back in on the same.
I think that would be very good. Members of the last, great, please.
Mr. Chairman, there was an issue discussed earlier about the meetings by telephone.
Yes.
And I did a little research while you guys were getting your picture taken. And Scott was right. We had this conversation last June, and there was a new provision enacted just this last session that does allow meetings by telephone or other electronic means. And so it would be possible to plug somebody into the meeting by telephone at a future meeting if you needed to do that to get the requisite number. It is possible, and August 1 was the right date. It was effective on August 1st. So I've got the language here if anybody wants to see it.
Thank you very much, Scott. Scott.
To clarify, they will have the right to vote and do any and all business as though they were here.
Greg, you know, is that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The quorum participation, each member of the entity participating in a meeting by telephone or other electronic means, is considered present at the meeting for the purpose of determining a quorum and participating in all proceedings.
Great.
Bill? Greg, are there any requirements of the remote location?
Not necessarily on the remote. location. There is something about monitoring from a remote site that allows somebody else to do it, and I'm not quite sure exactly how that part's supposed to work. I think that's for somebody who wants to monitor from a remote site. But it does, I mean, there are conditions, and I'll just point out to me, that all members of the entity participating in where the physical location can hear one another, can hear all discussion and testimony. Members of the public present at the regular meeting location entity can hear all discussion and all votes of members of the entity and participate in testimony. At least one member of the entity is physically present at the regular meeting location, and all votes are conducted by roll call, so each member's vote on each issue can be identified and recorded.
Very good.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Do we have 100% of the members available for the 7th of January meeting?
We do not. We have two members who will not be present. We have one member who would be absent if we met on the 13th. And I think both dates are placeholders, and I think we need to give staff that authority and responsibility to figure out the best way to handle that, because one of the members is not going to be in a very easy connect up location, and there might be a preferable date over one over the other for that individual. Scott?
I'm sure our council could give him a satellite phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Satellite?
Actually, I have one. It's $1.68 a minute.
Great. So
we're good.
We'll call you.
Still $1.68 a minute.
Only for the vote.
No, do we have any public comments?
I have received no requests. However, if there's anybody in the audience who would like to make a public comment at this point in time, please raise your hand and step forward. Seeing no one volunteering to make comments, there are no public comments.
Well, members, I just want to reiterate, this was great work. I think a lot of members shared the feeling that we had a great process, I think, to set our priorities in response. We have some tremendous proposals. Given what we have to work with, I think we have a tremendous slate of projects that are lined up, and so I look forward to having one more meeting to tie this together and move this to the legislature. David?
I have just one thought, which is we have indicated that for Anoka County, it was promised, but do we need to explicitly include that?
Bill? Oh, great. What do you know? It will be in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, when you approved the dollar amount last week, I thought you approved the document.
We did.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yep. It will stay in there. You know, our last year's bill was this is the first of two planned appropriations. This year's appropriation bill will have that appropriation amount in there.
Mr. Chairman, there was a document that was previously in there that had that amount in there. You kind of backed out the amount that you had today, assuming that that was including the cost of running the council and all those sorts of things.
That's
included that back. I'm assuming that when you adopted that back with that number, that automatically includes those.
That's my understanding, Bill.
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to adjourn. Thank you very much.
Would you turn in your travel expenses to...